I'm ready. And they kind of at least what.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Right. We have everyone's attention. Welcome to our September 8th meeting of our Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon Shellfish. This fine September 8th day. I want to start off by, as we wrap up this process, thanking all of you for your persistence and your expertise and everything that you brought to the table. And we've spent a long time on this. We've worked very hard, and I want to make sure that you all understand how much we appreciate the time it takes you to come to these meetings and share with us your thoughts and expertise on where we're trying to hit. So I just want to thank you profusely for all of your hard work, and you as well, Senator. And, of course, our most able staff, who's done a fantastic job of schlepping things all over the state and supporting our efforts. So thank you. What I'd like to do first today, and I think you all have in front of you a draft of an initiative that the first thing I want to do is have Beth just walk us through the document so we all clearly understand what's here, the process that we've done to get to this point. And then we have to confirm some things that came out of the subgroup ranking late that we need to spend a little bit of time on. So first of all, let's turn it over to Beth and let her just walk us through what you have in front of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Task Force members. So in front of you, you have the kind of the first page here, and it's also available on OLIS if anyone is listening online. So this introductory paragraph is just a basic overview of the importance of the shellfish industry and importance of shellfish to Oregon, some information about the economic benefit to Oregon and to coastal communities. Do you want to take comments on each section as I move through, or just have me explain it?
I will look to you all to see. We're going to walk through it.
It would be my preference that we at least pause at every break and see if there are comments, and that way, in the absence of some constructive criticism, it is deemed to be acceptable and we move on.
Thank you.
In the overview section.
Has everybody had a chance to look at this?
Okay, the next piece is just the pathway to an Oregon Shellfish Initiative. It provides a little bit of background in terms of the legislature taking action in House Bill 2209 and establishing the task force members, and then part of your work product that you've done, meeting since November 2015 and the seven meetings you've held. Comments? All right, the next section outlines kind of the importance of the public-private partnership.
Sorry to be a pain right out of the box, but one of the things that we have talked about on previous occasions, and in my read of this, it stuck in my mind.
Still back on the first page?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is under Pathway to an Oregon Shellfish Initiative.
Thank you.
Was I think that at one point in time we talked about, rather than reinventing the wheel, stealing as much good stuff as we could from other folks. And I don't know whether or not the professional staff or the subcommittee pilfered what was pilferable from go ahead, Dr. Rummel.
Yes, so we echoed that comment. I think I raised that up during our work group discussion last week, anticipating that and taking that good guidance. So I think that what we have done is tried to take the good lessons learned, particularly from Washington Shellfish Initiative, and incorporate them here.
Because my understanding is that this, when we agree on it by, I hope, consensus, this becomes the foundational document against which to build a bill for the next session and appropriate money, not only for a big initiative, but also for sort of the sub-initiatives that are recommended in our report. And I just wanted to make sure that I'm not an outlier in believing that that's how we're going to proceed. Okay, cool.
Okay. Any other comments?
Proceed, Beth. So the public-private partnership for Oregon Shellfish just outlines that this collective partnership is going to bring together the different stakeholders that are necessary to have this conversation and kind of the important tasks that this entity is faced with. Comments? The summary of the task force recommendations, this kind of outlines the basic kind of task that we were given in terms of when the bill laid out for us these kind of objectives to touch on. And so this is just kind of a reminder of what those specifics were, and then a list of the appendixes that have more information. The group obviously did a lot over the course of this process, and so we didn't want any of that to be lost. So we made sure that all of it was included. The next section is a call to action for the 2017 legislative session. So I think this section refers to what Senator Johnson was just speaking to, that I guess I should maybe go back a little bit. I think it's in the previous section where, no, it's this one, never mind, that that it says that, that the task force has some things that they've identified that should be implemented immediately in the 2017 session, but then that the remainder of the items should be kind of more looked as long-term things that should be worked on. And so this is just trying to call out those things that in the upcoming legislative session that you would like to see action on. And I think in conversations with Rep. McHugh, that list, this part is still maybe fluid, that this hasn't been confirmed that this is the final or done list. This is just what we pulled from that last critical actions page in the work group.
And we're, Madam Chair, we're going to have to get down in the weeds when we start drafting legislation, because some of these recommend executive action or seek legislation. I don't know if executive action is possible or what the sideboards are. Designate representatives, that's going to be dicey to make sure that there's adequate representation and who sits at the table. We got to fill in the dollar amounts. And then I don't know whether or not this group that, frankly, has done the seat time to bring us this far would be the review committee for legislation, and I'm asking that just sort of open-ended. I mean, you all have done that, the heavy lifting. I think it seems fair that you would get to pass judgment on drafts.
Should you choose to.
And I think that becomes a question of, you've all committed a great deal of time thus far. Do you want to continue to, or are you ready to be done and move forward? So I think that's an individual question to each of you, at what level you want to participate as we continue to move.
The other thing that struck me as a little bit dicey is in asking ODF&W to build partnerships with sovereign nations. That's going to take some fleshing out, and it's going to take some input from the tribes. Relationships are built on trust, not on bills being passed. And I think to get some indication, I'm looking at you, Don, because of your obvious expertise, how to properly phrase that, how to build the expectation that ODF&W isn't coming in trying to impose something on sovereign nations.
And Don, at the risk of stepping in here, I know we've had conversations over the last few months with the Legislative Commission on Indian Services about how communications occur, and the word that comes to mind is consultation. And I want to draw attention to that on the record, that as those collaborations move forward, that in the spirit of being very respectful, that the word consultation continues to be a part of that.
Then let's take out build partnerships and just say engage in consultation.
Yeah.
Better?
Yeah, I think it might be helpful to, rather than use sovereign nations, just speak to Oregon's federally recognized tribes.
Sure.
Yeah. And then we don't get into the weeds of what does sovereign mean.
The other thing, Don, I don't know whether or not you would want to treat all nine of the tribes equally. It seems to me that some of them may have a greater interest in coastal activities than others. But I don't know if you consult with one, you consult with all, or we could be selective.
And Senator, I may draw attention to a prior paragraph, the public-private partnership report, refers to the coastal tribes. Maybe we just be consistent through the document and use coastal tribes. Would that be helpful?
That works.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay, so the sounds like we want to come back to the first two bullet points in this section to do some wordsmithing is what I'm hearing, but that the one change that we're talking about making is the direct the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to engage in consultation with Oregon's coastal tribes and others to continue efforts to protect and conserve.
Well, I don't know we have to wordsmith, Beth, necessarily. I just don't, off the top of my head, know whether or not this, the establishment of a shellfish initiative would be in the purview of executive action. The designate representatives, I'm fine having it stay the way it is in this report, but when we get a bill draft going, I think we've got to be careful about who's at the table. Just to make sure there's a broad cross-section.
Okay.
Is everyone agree with that motion?
Okay, this next section, I really have to thank Steve a lot for. He took all of our recommendations and really tried to get them down to short titles, and the working subgroup on writing this really helped refine them, so it's very helpful. So this list, this Appendix A, is a list of all of the recommendations that have been kind of discussed at this point. The list was much larger the last meeting, but we worked very diligently to try to consolidate some of those where there was overlap so that there wouldn't be quite as many and so specific. So we've done a lot of effort to try to bring those all together. And this is a list of all of the final task force recommendations.
I very much like the inclusion of this list because we're not going to get the full bite at the apple in each legislative session. This is going to be a multiple biennia undertaking. And I think this is such a nice consolidation of kind of a check or a consolidation of kind of a checklist. And who knows, 10 years from now or 20 years from now, when whoever is sitting in these chairs and gets this work done, there'll be little check marks next to all of these and we'll be finished.
I don't know if it went into health, be there. But I couldn't find it in here, but we talked about the use it or lose it for some of the plats that aren't being utilized as part of the enhancement, and I didn't really see that in the summary, because I think we identified that as a...
It's in our table, I think, isn't it?
It's in the table, but I didn't see it in the summary.
So, Madam Chair and committee members, so the next section on there, so this is like, this section is a very pared down... kind of like almost like a title for each thing, so very much like a checklist. But if you move to this, not to move us on prematurely, but in Appendix B is all of the high priority items. So anything that was for immediate implementation or long-term implementation that the group decided that those are contained in this. And then that specific one that you're speaking to is on page 6 of 12, under immediate implementation, okay. The conduct routine field visits to commercial mariculture lease areas to ensure productivity and compliance with lease conditions in order to increase available areas for commercial shellfish mariculture by the enforcement of the existing use it or lose it requirements rather than opening up new area for commercial leases.
Thank you.
So it is explicitly called out. No, that's good. Sorry.
I think, Mike, that's an excellent point, though, because as we struggle to paint the biggest picture, we didn't want to lose the guts, the richness of our actual recommendations. So,
right.
So that's why we have this hierarchy.
But let's go back to the point that Mike raised. Out of the appendix, certain things get lifted up for inclusion in this task list. Some get left behind. I think the use it or lose it conversation has been apparent through all of these meetings, and even though it is included in the appendix, I don't know why it shouldn't be lifted up onto the enhanced
shellfish production.
Yeah, I mean, we've made certain choices about what to include in this recitation and what things to leave in the appendix to dig into further, and I would support Mike's notion that use it or lose it ought to be lifted up onto this Appendix A.
And I would suggest that's why we're here today going over this with all of our eyes on it, is to find those areas where we want to make sure we're fine-tuning. And I'm perfectly fine putting a 9.1, and Beth, at some point you can renumber to put the use it or lose it concept. Do we have any objection to that? No, that's fine. That's why we're here.
It's really, really helpful.
That's what we're doing. We want all eyes on. Is there anything else in Appendix A that is jumping out at you?
Do you want to go through each one of these one at a time and get sign off on them?
I guess my question to you all is, are you comfortable enough with the document that we divert from Beth just kind of giving us the lay of the land and start actually getting into the nitty-gritty? Everybody all right with that? Okay. All right. Then yes. Please.
So the encourage collaboration section, anything like that?
Okay, check that one off.
Okay, enhance shellfish production with the addition of a new one that would be the use it or lose it. And I would call that out as a specific goal rather than having it separated into the other one.
Regarding it, it seemed like the use it or lose it clause came up. It's almost under the ODA, the very first encouraging collaboration state agency leadership, and just saying that the agency should be enforcing existing regulations. So I wonder if you ought to just put it right up there. I don't have a real strong preference, but it certainly refers to the fact that there is this standing requirement, and it's not really being widely enforced, and so.
I think I'm going to look to agency staff and look to the producers as to where you think it best fits.
That's where we had it, was under that first collaboration and agency leadership in the big table. It shows up in that very first square.
Yeah, I think we found that it could fit in a couple different spots, you know, enhancement and all these other areas, because instead of establishing new lands, let's make sure we can use the ones we have. So it could probably go in a variety of these. It doesn't matter. As long as, you know, I think it's a key to what we're doing, is trying to, one, take a look at what our existing assets are, and as long as it's there somewhere.
Okay. So maybe I'll just, so, and that's why this is really helpful, because in a lot of the consolidation, we were trying to group them so it was a little bit more manageable. So in areas where we should really be pulling something out, this is exactly the kind of feedback that is really important right now. So I can pull that into a separate one. It was just my attempts at making it more compact. So it's really, really helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Moving on.
Okay, so enhanced shellfish production is okay then. So develop best management practices.
Okay.
Impacts of ocean acidification.
Senator?
Well, this one is an incredibly important one, and I keep thinking about the pivotal role that OSU played in salvaging Whiskey Creek. There's an expense attached with this, and I think we have agreed that we're just not going to talk about money on some of this stuff, but to identify potential impacts of ocean acidification, that's a potential PhD thesis kind of stuff. And I'm looking at Dr. Sylvia. Are you comfortable having it in there, not priced? I mean, seems to me it's going to fall to your shop to worry about some of this stuff.
So what are we worried about? An unfunded mandate that it's in here and that someone's expected to do
it? I think it's priced in the appendix, is it not?
I think it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a price in the appendix.
Okay, if you're cool with how it's...
I'm okay with it.
Okay, I'm fine.
But I think that is a good point to maybe make clear for the record that this is that this is in theory like a exactly how Senator Johnson referred to it, almost as a checklist for that larger appendix that really tries to capture much more information. So maybe for the record, that's a good thing to put on that this is all part of your recommendation.
Okay,
so be it.
Okay, impacts of socioeconomic costs and benefits.
Now, I still am struggling with the develop ecosystem services valuation report. I just don't know that I know what those words mean.
Someone help us here, please. Yes, someone help us here, because I'm struggling with it as well.
So maybe it's a choice of words here, and Steve can also weigh in, or others in the group. But one of the values of shellfish, particularly oysters, is their ability to filter estuarine waters, and they do this to a pretty significant degree. So there have been some studies that suggest this is extremely valuable economic benefit to people, to clean water, and it needs to be recognized, even its value determined. Because in making decisions about the aquaculture industry or use of estuaries, that's not often considered in terms of that value. Also has significant issues with the ability to restore native oysters and the role that they could play in the ecosystem. So this phrase ecosystem, valuing ecosystem services, is one of those that's kind of risen up in the last decade or so to say what are the values and benefits that derive from nature and how do we recognize though in making ultimate policy decisions. So that's what this is about. So in some cases, you look at Chesapeake Bay or others, I mean, these things could be estimated in the hundreds of millions of dollars of value.
At the risk of falling into the wordsmithing abyss, is there a way to say that that would be more understandable to the layperson?
I think in the writing team had a good long discussion right about this.
Oh, we did. Yes, that's right.
And so in the page 8 of 12, we tried to define this by just calling it the economic costs and benefits associated with shellfish.
I'd sure like that language better than ecosystem services valuation.
Yeah. Okay. But just to add to that, though, we did have a discussion that this was an opportunity to, who was it that raised that argument about educating the public about the concept? That's why it stayed in here of ecosystem services. But we don't want to confuse people, but how do you use the document to educate people? Right, wasn't that the gist of our discussion?
It was, yeah. It was a big discussion. We spent probably 45 minutes on this.
You're going to hear this phrase in terms of policy a lot more over the coming decades.
Beth brings up a point, though, that if we somehow can take that very small, very heavily loaded phrase and tie it to shellfish, it may be helpful in this particular document.
Oh.
Well, beneficial role of shellfish in the ecosystem.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. Yes, I think that captures it.
This is a narrowly focused thing we're trying to do, and that opens a very large box. Okay. So, Beth, can you have I'll have Beth read back what she's crafting here and see if everybody agrees we can focus this just a little bit more.
Develop valuation report identifying or on beneficial role of shellfish in ecosystem, in the ecosystem.
Or do we want to make it specific to water quality? Do we want to make it more specific or less specific?
I'm fine with what Beth read.
Okay. Did everybody get that? Okay. Does that...
Just repeat it one more time.
I'm wordsmithing right now. Develop a valuation report measuring the beneficial role of shellfish in the ecosystem.
So that, you have to be careful about that because that starts to get away from the costs and benefits. It starts to sound, maybe it favors the system somehow, but does it really impact human beings? That's my only concern with the
way
you
phrase it. Do you have a suggestion?
I'd use the word costs and benefits and associate it with the ecosystem in some associated way. Sorry.
Create valuation report on costs and benefits of the role of shellfish in the ecosystem?
Yes.
Okay.
Does anyone remember what I just said?
That way you've got, it's almost the same as if you had costs and benefits.
Create a valuation report. That's how you started.
That's right. Conduct evaluation report identifying
cost and benefit.
Cost and benefit.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Comment
sir?
From the audience.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't see you behind Beth. My apology. And identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Laura Brown, the shellfish biologist of the Confederated Tribes of Select Indians. And I was just wondering, with that wording, is there a way that shellfish could be deemed not valuable to, like, you know, if it's like a cost, like, we always assume that it'll be, that everyone will.
Okay, so let's just take the debate, for example, with eelgrass, right? So there may be some who argue that some types of aquaculture might reduce eelgrass, which has some other potential benefit. to humans and the ecosystem to recover endangered salmon or something. So you're right. So now you get this tension between some types of costs versus benefits. I mean, most people in this room believe probably the benefits would exceed costs, but not to have the word cost in there might neglect some key issues in studying its role for human values in the ecosystem. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just didn't know if, like, you know, you wrote out a pros and cons list and somehow the cons won out, and we're like, well, guess we won't do it.
Well, sometimes we don't know, right?
Right.
And you might be surprised one way or the other. Typically, though, it's usually make the case that the benefits are being ignored, particularly in terms of effects on water quality.
Anyone else?
Or maybe we could just say validate the beneficial role of shellfish in the ecosystem.
What do you think?
Then you do have the potential to ignore some other more contentious or difficult issues. That's the only problem with just validating.
Just trying to simplify.
You're just looking on one side of the ledger. Right? So whatever works for the legislature.
Okay, so right now I have create a valuation report identifying the costs and benefits of shellfish in the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think that would work.
Broad enough, but focused on what we're trying to do here. Okay, moving on.
Okay, F, improve water quality, biotoxin testing, and monitoring of harmful algae blooms.
Can I raise an issue here on our recommendations number 20 and 21? Frank and I just received an email yesterday afternoon from the Department of Environmental Quality with, you know, up to a page and a half of discussion about those issues. I don't know how, Frank, I don't know how to distill their recommendations into those.
Dr. Rumbrill, this one's going to be, this one I flagged when I read this. And my first thought was, is it the job of this task force to modernize and improve wastewater treatment plants?
Yeah.
No, it's not. So I can understand why we want to give it a nod, that this has an impact, but I'm not sure that is our charge.
Yeah, can I agree and add some comments? So our original number 20 was to improve water quality in Oregon Bays and estuaries. Mm-hmm. It was very broad.
Mm-hmm. Too broad for me.
Too broad. And so DEQ objected to that and said that's too broad for us. And verbally, they provided this, modernize and improve.
But now they've
written and said, ran into a dead end offering up that proposed revision. So I'm not sure what they're saying at this point. So I think for us right now, we need to just flag that as problematic or remove it.
Or eliminate it.
I've got two questions. First of all, is the memo that you have gotten from them one of substance and policy, or is it their reaction to this document?
I think it's just a reaction to this document.
Okay.
At this point.
I have to say, and I know that this is on the record, so I say it respectfully, I remain deeply suspicious of some of the activities that they're engaged in terms of equity and how the agency is dealing with industry and the values that they want to get in a clean environment. And so it made me nervous when you said that they'd sent a memo. I didn't know what the substance was. But I don't think that we should leave this vague. The chair and I were just having a conversation about how vagueness leads to problems. So I'd rather knock it out or wordsmith it in a way that we can agree by consensus. But I don't want to just say, could be a problem, and move on, because it will be a problem.
Does anyone object if we eliminate that?
It is one of the issues that we have to deal with when it comes to shellfish regulation. But again, it's not so much what we considered part of the task force. We were glad to see it in there in the sense that it might help us reduce the scope of some of the closures. But that's a different issue compared to what we were talking about.
But that's the pilot for water quality testing that we're already doing, which doesn't go way, way, way up to the top of the ladder saying we are going to modernize and improve wastewater treatment plants, because that is not our job.
So we're not objecting to you pulling that out.
And okay.
It's just an issue that we face all the time with this.
I would recommend we pull it out.
I think it goes way beyond just water treatment plants, too. I mean, we could set up a whole other committee to talk about these issues from farms and everything else that deals with water quality. It's kind of not one of them.
Failed septic. But that's a whole other issue beyond the bounds of what we're trying to do here, in my mind. I don't know, but I'd love to know what you all think. We're everybody okay if we pull this out? Is anybody...
Delete it.
Okay.
I'd rather have it deleted than as vague as it is.
And your last comment segues right into number 21, expand application of the septic tank fund. I'm not sure that that's within the purview of a shellfish initiative, and we could just do that administratively.
That's a matter of us going to bat for funds to put into a program that already exists. And if we would like to give a nod to the Oregon Septic Loan Fund program, fine. But do we want to actually go to bat for funds that are going to compete with money that we want to do things that are directly related to the Shellfish Initiative by putting money into this program that already exists that I think as a caucus we're going to go to bat for anyway? But I'm not sure it's in the purview of this organization. Senator, we could, in the scope of, I don't know, drafting legislation, write a letter on behalf of this task force supporting that, but that's a budget issue that's going to come depending on what the budget looks like.
Well, I would think, and you know, we don't want to ignore the fact that, you know, water quality is something that this task force is concerned with, but we don't want to tackle it on our own. So maybe if we just had some form of statement supporting existing measures to improve and monitor water quality, you know, some statement of support without committing ourselves to.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar. I think we need to at least, since water quality is really important, we should maybe at least say that we support the evaluation of water quality impacts to shellfish production areas and realizing that it is a very big issue and there are other departments that are solely focused on this. But again, we shouldn't duck it entirely or just, I think, lose that really important.
Acknowledge it's a problem, attribute. Support efforts, and move on.
Well, the regulatory structure around wastewater and septic is there. I mean, there's a job for the agency already to do there. Yeah. We can acknowledge the importance of that. We could acknowledge the fact that we do have an Oregon Septic Loan Fund program, that is something that we support. But I'm not sure it's our job to go champion dollars to put in there.
I want to take the septic fund out because there are lots of other things that we could champion that lend to water quality, that lend to better ecosystems, that lend to all sorts of stuff. And if we start picking and choosing those that we want to support versus those we don't, I'd take it out.
Well, that's why I was kind of thinking just a general that we support all current and existing measures and programs, something broad that just covers it and kind of puts it under all efforts being conducted throughout the state.
Looking around the room.
I also, Mike, want to be really careful about having some overzealous agency use this document as a reason to go after dairymen in Tillamook County.
True. Yeah.
I think on number 21, the Oregon Septic Loan Fund does not preclude providing support to folks who have failed septic system in shellfish growing areas. It's already available. So I'm not sure why we need that anyway. We're expanding the application. It's already available, right, Senator?
Is it meant more as of a give them a way to tell them to focus on those areas, maybe? It's just worded wrong?
I think there was one, and I may be wrong, I think I saw one notice or one note in here that said to give it special consideration. Was that it?
I guess that's what I'm thinking. Maybe it's just not worded
properly. Is that a place we want to go or do we not want to go? There's a program there. It's not funded very well right now. And it was designed for coastal lakes. It was designed for coastal lakes is what it was. Because we're having such algal bloom problems in our coastal lakes. But let's talk about this in the Coastal Caucus. And this is a bill that passed. It's not very well funded. We're going to have to push to get it funded. If we want to tweak it and somehow note shellfish growing areas, we could do this in another venue.
So you're arguing to delete 21?
Yeah.
And I would support that.
So does that mean we delete F altogether?
I think keeping the harmful
Bloom monitoring program.
It seems like we've scratched everything.
We've kind of deleted. Yeah, we've kind of
deleted
weakened the whole water quality issue somehow. I'm not sure how to rectify that, but I agree that the other septic loan fund is way too much in the weeds for us to be diving into, and eliminating the first one makes sense too. But it seems like we still should be promoting water quality in one way or another, and maybe even just evaluating it.
So I'm looking to the growers.
Inputs.
Is an algal bloom monitoring program beneficial to you?
I don't know that I know when it's been an issue for us, whether we knew or didn't know. So I think it's more of a
tell us.
They would affect closures, right? So if there was PSP or something, which has never come into the bays that I know of for what they're already doing. So I would say no, based on my experience. It doesn't seem to make a difference one way or the other, but I don't have the knowledge to say why it doesn't.
But what does are weather events that create fecal coliform problems for you? It's not necessarily the algal bloom problems that you're concerned about.
Right.
It's more of a lakes issue than it is an estuary issue. Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, we're talking about ocean marine biotoxins here as well, so like red tides, clam closures on the coast, so it wouldn't necessarily affect the aquaculture within the bays so much, the algal bloom monitoring and that kind of thing, but like the razor clam industry in Clatsop County, clam divers to a certain extent, but mainly it's just the recreational and the commercial razor clam industry along the coast would be affected.
Alex, what this says is reestablish an Oregon harmful algal bloom monitoring program. We have one. Does it need to be reestablished?
Yeah, if I can answer. So
okay.
Oregon historically had one with seed money from the federal government. So they provided us with 5 years of support. And so there was one in place. And then that seed money disappeared. State of Oregon didn't pick it up.
And so how long ago was that?
That was probably 2010, 2011, that it ended. So right now we don't have a program in place to actually go out and look at the cells that are creating these harmful algal blooms.
So is this creating a problem for you?
Actually, it would be an improvement if we could look at that, but we don't have the expertise there either to do this. So
we would be establishing.
We're looking at the effects of the toxin itself.
A program.
So not
okay.
The organisms that are causing it, which would be a more advanced warning to us.
So we are monitoring currently biotoxins in shellfish. ODA is doing that. We take samples twice a month all along the coastline. And that's what we use to inform the public whether or not they can safely harvest and that kind of thing. ODF&W used to have a program where it was more predictive. They would go out and look at plankton cell counts and that kind of thing. So that's kind of what was lost. We have a monitoring program as far as what's in the shellfish currently. So it was kind of two partner programs that were operating. Now we just have one half of it.
We draw a lot of information from California because they do that program. So as we see things creep up the coast, that gives us a little bit of knowledge.
Yes, sir.
I think just out of being precautionary, we should certainly reestablish this harmful algal bloom program. Even though we don't have a problem today, we certainly are seeing things that we didn't expect to happen yesterday happening today. So I think it's certainly a good reason to at least bring this forward and realize that this should be the way we should be certainly looking after our resources. And yes, they're not affecting growers, luckily, at this point, but it seems like I would hate to see something that sneak up on us as well. So I think we can keep that one in there.
Any objections to eliminating 20 and 21 and leaving 22 there? It did have an immediate high priority or an immediate implementation high priority when we went through this the first time.
I guess I would just echo what Dick said. I mean, water quality is a pretty big deal, and maybe you're right, maybe this is not the right way to deal with it, but it's, I mean, now we're not even talking about water quality within the bays. The only action item we have for water quality is reestablishing the offshore or the coastal harmful algal bloom monitoring. So, you know, contaminants in the water is not even in any of these recommendations now.
If not getting into the weeds on a septic loan fund program, which is very specific, and not being broad enough to say that it's this task force's job to modernize and improve wastewater treatment plants, how could we accomplish what you're trying to say, continue with the reestablishment of the algal bloom program, and accomplish what you're trying to accomplish? Is it a nod that water quality is critically important to this industry?
Maybe that's just an overarching statement to say that we are committed to improving, well, seeing that water quality, you know, improves. But I would just like, it seems like that would be a recommendation, or at least that we would support that, because it's so critical. That's very critical to their.
But here's the problem. If we're trying to write legislation, it has to be something very specific. It has to be an action item. This is something we're going to do. We're not going to go fix wastewater and treatment plants.
Could it be something as simple as, you know, coordinate and support existing programs? Or I don't know. That seems kind of too specific or too general.
Let's go. Beth just brought something to my attention. Could you please turn to page 8? And it may help us focus and get beyond this. It says improve water at the middle of page 8. Improved water quality and monitoring related to mariculture certification and improved monitoring of bays and estuaries for biotoxins, harmful algal blooms, and fecal indicator bacteria is critical. These objectives should be accomplished as follows. And if we're not going to do wastewater and we're not going to do septic loan, it goes down to the third paragraph, and it gets down to the very specifics of the HAB monitoring.
Complicated to address in one action item, I think. I was thinking that maybe we'd have a statement like earlier where it says direct Oregon Department of Agriculture to engage in consultational collaboration with DEQ like we did with the tribes. But that's not really very helpful either, so.
This
maybe we need to
be in the form of legislation, so. And I don't want to get hung up on this for too long. We've got quite a bit more work to do. We were hoping to wrap this up today.
The title of that is completely wrong then, because just establishing a harmful algal bloom monitoring program is not going to do anything to improve water quality. You can't improve it by monitoring it.
Well, it seems like we should first just call for a water quality evaluation in these shellfish production areas or bays that we're certainly seeing shellfish harvested. So we know what are the impacts, you know, whether it's failed septics or whatever the case may be. And so maybe that's what the one thing we can do is what's the issue right now, and we can ask for that some money to evaluate that so we know where to go from.
And actually, that would fall into the pilot that we're doing right now in Tillamook that we want to expand.
Certainly. That would expand that to the other bays. And to ask those questions and see, then we'll know what we may do or may not have to do at this point.
So could we tie it to the one on expanding the pilot program to identify potential pollution?
Establish a baseline.
And the pilot program was basically to get things open quicker after there's an event.
Sure. Right,
that was very specific.
Could we expand it to where it's to identify pollution point sources or pollution sources, pollution types
affecting shellfish
in estuaries? So maybe instead of doing monthly sampling, Alex, we do we add some stations at point sources or in different areas to get a baseline, like you just said.
A baseline for future.
And that would identify points that need fixing, where in the next go around of this you could actually target certain
specifics,
certain things. Is it cows? Is it birds? Is it houses? Is it, what is it? Is it stormwater runoff? I mean, we've had all kinds of different things.
I think using this to establish some form of a baseline of where we're at now for future legislation to address, I don't know, something along those lines makes sense, because that addresses a water quality problem without...
I'm looking to the agency folks. Are we not already doing some of this?
Yeah.
Isn't that your job, to make sure that the water's clean so we can harvest oysters? What are we missing, and do we want to get...
Well, I'm almost thinking like we scratch F out altogether and maybe add, take 22 and add that to impacts of ocean acidification, maybe change that title and just... because that's kind of a monitoring research type function. And the HAB monitoring is not improving water quality. And if we're not able to do anything with wastewater treatment plants and septic loans, then we may as well just remove that one altogether and just lump algal blooms in with ocean acidification and kind of like a, you know, a green...
makes sense.
Focused.
I feel like there should be.
Do you have language?
I don't have language. I was just thinking maybe we'd change the title to D to include harmful algal bloom monitoring or something, and then just throw 22 up there and in with the D's.
And would you want to make it broader, impacts of ocean conditions?
Yeah, ocean conditions sounds like they would cover both.
Could we potentially, by omitting something, cut into or have the potential for something they're already doing getting whacked off the books? Could we do damage by not including something?
I don't think
no. Okay. You overestimate how powerful this document is. What's going to drive this session is budget hole in Medicaid, budget hole in a lawsuit, the effects of some of these stupid ballot measures. That's what's going to be the driver.
I just want to make sure we weren't going to undo anything that was...
Okay. Okay, so just to summarize where we're currently at, to see if everyone wants to go that direction, we would be changing D to impacts of ocean conditions and adding on 22 that would reestablish an Oregon HAB monitoring program, and then removing F altogether.
Yeah.
Any objection?
Is there something else?
I just asked Steve. I didn't have the original bill in front of me, but he remembers that. If you have the original bill, Beth, or someone, it does mention about water, recommendations about water quality. So I don't know how true we need to be to the exact what was required in the original bill. And even if we take away from this section, because it's complicated politically and for other reasons, is there some other statement that we discussed that there should be somewhere in here that does acknowledge the importance of water quality and improving water quality, but can do it generically enough so we're not getting entangled in some more complex political issue regarding water quality?
And I appreciate the goal of making sure that people understand that this organization understands and values it. But this is a task force that's going to make a recommendation for legislation. And if we make a statement, where does that end up, Senator? I mean, who sees it if we just make a statement?
Whoever wants to use it for whatever purposes.
I understand.
Yeah. So I understand what you're saying. I guess the example that keeps coming to my mind is eelgrass. Jess is increasing production a bunch in a bay where the water quality will improve because there are a lot more oysters than there used to be, and they filter. So we're looking at the valuation of what Jess is doing. That's important. We're looking at, you know, the eelgrass issues. I just don't think we're in the business here of septic tanks and water treatment facilities. But on the other hand, it's important to the industry. So I'm open for suggestions about how we make a nod, we write a statement, we publish some sort of support of what agencies are doing to monitor water quality. Yes, we need to fund the septic loan program. I think, you know, we can, but I think for us to say this is a piece of what we're trying to do for the Shellfish Initiative is really problematic. So
here's how I guess I approach this whole thing is, this is not it. This is not the final version. There will be something next year and the year after and the year after and the year after. So trying to get everything in and perfect this go-around will never get anywhere. I think we touch on the things. We talked about it in our subgroup. Make a supplemental list of this is what we feel that the next group or the committee you talked about earlier should we feel they should focus on in the future. And as it develops, it'll become something more substantial. But we're not going to get all this in here.
And we could put a statement in here that says, as the Shellfish Initiative evolves over the next X number of biennia, we want to keep a focus on water quality.
I would be happier to do that than to strike it. I don't think it should be struck at all, because to me it's one of the major pieces is water quality in the bay determines whether or not you're successful or not, regardless of whether it deals with septics or whether it deals with forest logging or cows or whatever.
Not striking it.
Everybody's got to find this piece that works together.
So we pull it to a kind of a higher plane, and as this moves forward biennia by biennia, keep the focus on improving water quality in the ways that the agencies are already doing it. And if how's that? But we continue to focus on it.
But don't get
in the specifics of...
And it could even be as simple as, you know, we make the recommendation that a task force be appointed to address water quality in the something along that lines, because it is too broad of or too big of an issue for this. Just we recommend that it... a future task force.
Looking instead at the, of striking it, can we move it to a to-do list?
Sure.
Quotes.
So there's
future
on page,
recommendations.
Sorry, on page 3, the last bullet is convene the Oregon Shellfish Initiative Oversight Committee to consider what has been implemented in the 2017 session and adopt the priority goals and recommendations offered by the Oregon Shellfish Task Force. You could put something there that would be it would be the intention of the task force to consider
continue to revisit this issue.
Yeah. And include something like that there.
The task force recommendation is that you focus on these items.
Yeah. It seems like a good solution. What I was going to raise up is just share with everyone how this problem was dealt with in Washington. Washington has an overall big goal, which was similar to the one that we had articulated. But their goal is worded, ensure clean water to protect and restore shellfish growing areas in Puget Sound and on the coast. And then they have 5 specific recommendations that deal with non-point source pollution, oil spills, contaminants, another one on sewer and stormwater outfalls, preventable pollution from vessels and recreational activities, and also land-based issues. So it takes them 5 pages to go through all of that.
I would accept the first bullet as impacts of ocean conditions and leave off all the rest. That's overbroad for Oregon. We're not going to get into adjudicating ocean spills in a shellfish initiative, but that read the first sentence again.
That first one was ensure clean water to protect and restore shellfish growing areas. And that's very similar to our original recommendation, which was improve water quality in the shellfish growing area.
And I think what's got us high-centered is we got a little bit far in the weeds by bringing the 2 very specific things in. Maybe we need to keep it broader.
I just need to plagiarize that statement.
Yeah, I like that statement because the improve for me is assumes it's bad now. And I think you guys don't always, I mean...
It's not perfect, but it's a heck of a lot better than it was 10 years ago with what...
And improving.
So let's just plagiarize there.
Okay.
So I think so. If the last sentence said something like the Oregon Shellfish Task Force recommends that the Oregon Shellfish Initiative Oversight Committee continue work to ensure clean water to protect and restore shellfish growing areas. And then we would, so that's keep, and then we would scratch F and add 22. To D and change that to impacts of ocean conditions.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. I'm trying to look at my time frame here. We have...
Is it scratching F just real quick, or moving it to the...
Sorry. It's removing F from this list and having it instead reflect in the 2017 critical actions that the Oregon Shellfish Initiative would... Yes, so it's not removing it from your recommendations. Thank you for the clarification. But it is removing the title from this list.
Okay. Moving on.
Okay, G, increase public education, outreach, and enhance recreational opportunities.
Anybody good?
H, assess wild shellfish stocks. I, restore native shellfish.
I guess 34, is that what we're talking about? That would apply maybe in... Somebody was to want to commercially do clams in Oregon?
Megan?
Number 34.
That's that the one?
Oh, 34?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be a look at the impacts of the purple varnish clam. That's that clam that is increasing in abundance down the coast.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, yeah, bad thing from some perspectives, good thing from other perspectives. So research needed. Another example is the naturalized soft shell clam that has come in. And then I think, Svein, the one you're talking about is the purple or the vanilla bottleneck clam. So three separate clams there.
What was the third one? Soft shell and what?
Vanilla bottleneck clams.
I mean, that one's in the enhanced, in the
right.
It's in Appendix B for long-term implementation.
I'm again kind of following off Senator's comment on how people can latch onto things. I know that's not the intent of this statement, but investigate impact of invasive clams. I would also read that and could read it as invasive oysters, which a lot of the commercial oysters are. Non-native, they're imported. So
that caught my eye when I read it.
Could that be construed by the wrong person?
I was a little worried about that.
What would you suggest?
I don't know.
How about just delete oysters? Remain silent on the question of oysters and leave invasive clams, non-native species on wild shellfish stocks. Is that too contrived?
Well, if you left non-native species in, at least it doesn't have the word invasive attached to oysters at that point.
Yeah, but if and you leave non-native in, doesn't that go back to our primary oysters here? Because technically they're not native.
It does, but I'm not saying it shouldn't be investigated. I just don't like the word invasive being attached to the industry that we're attempting to protect. I guess
good
that
point.
Makes
that's
some
a
like
very
that.
Good point.
I think it should be struck.
Yeah.
The word invasive.
Strike oysters and non-native species.
At least oysters if we leave the invasive. But there has to be some terminology that probably ties back to what ODF&W or other agencies would call the purple varnish clam, whether it's non-native or invasive.
Which is it?
So the term non-native is the broadest umbrella, so we could just use that term up in front and have that sweep across.
Again, I just got to say, from a non-oyster grower, from the outside, that term scares me, just considering that the Pacific oyster basically is a non-native oyster back in history. And saying what the senator took on yesterday, people could use this for whatever they want. And a few years from now, somebody could take our wording and go after the entire industry.
Right. Can we make it more specific, narrow it down, and say investigate the impacts of purple varnish clams, naturalized softshell clams, and manila clams?
Better, it's longer.
And just make it very narrow? Does that...
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Okay. I mean, if those are the ones we're concerned about, can we narrow it down to those?
I've just seen it so many times in Washington when people put out statements, whether it's an agency or a shellfish group, they put something in there and the wrong people latch on and quote
you're out of business.
They want.
Yeah,
right.
That's what scares me is just when I first read it, that Pacific oyster just popped into my mind as the first concern I had.
And that doesn't look, I mean, if you just say investigate impacts of these three, it doesn't put a negative spin on it at all. It just says study it and see what's going on.
See what they're doing, because it might be beneficial. Some people might.
And it could depend on the area, and that's, I think, what Steve's getting at is it's nice to know.
Okay, so then 34 would read, investigate the impacts of purple varnish clams, naturalized soft shell clams, and manila clams.
Yeah. Do we want the on wild shellfish stocks? Or just the impacts of those three?
I guess the intent was, because it's under restore native shellfish, on the effect it might have on the native shellfish.
So leave that last part on wild shellfish stocks.
That said, is there a broader implication down the road? But that might be covered on this next session that Alex talked about.
Gentlemen, are we getting too far afield here? Are you comfortable with that?
No, I'm comfortable with that. The one thing that is left out is the issue over the colonial tunicates that I raised up for the committee. So in Charleston and in the Umpqua Triangle, State of Oregon Invasive Species Council is spending about $40,000 over the last couple of years to investigate the spread of this tunicate. This tunicate is a colonial organism, almost like sponges growing on the bottom, and it's caused millions of dollars of damage to the scallop industry in the East Coast and to oysters up in British Columbia, Alaska as well.
Is that a specific threat to commercial shellfish production in our estuaries now? Are they already in oyster beds?
Yes, it's a problem for the commercial growers, oyster growers in the Umpqua Triangle.
Okay.
Is where that problem is.
And what's it called again?
Tunicate.
It's a tunicate or a ascidian.
We have them in Coos Bay.
Yeah.
But I guess that particular item wouldn't be under restore native shellfish heading. It would be under.
This doesn't preclude you from doing that work, does it, the way we're writing this?
No. I think that works, will continue, continue.
So we can not connect it to this at this point, and you can still go eradicate the tunicates, please.
On wild shellfish stocks, is that the end of this sentence, or are we leaving that piece out?
I mean, it's under restore rate of native shellfish.
Just thinking
so. Okay. Okay. Would you like to walk us through the appendix B?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. So this final list of following items is that title here. It says have been identified the shellfish task force as being a high priority for either immediate or long-term implementation. So this just are the items that raise to that level. So there's a little paragraph about each one, and it just includes a little bit more. It's a little bit less of the checklist version, and it includes just the items that are high priority and a little bit more of the discussion that went into kind of crafting these recommendations. So high priority, long-term, short-term. It includes your discussion.
Any of the changes we just made to the general list affect our priority list? Long-term, short-term, immediate? I think it would be my big.
It may.
Madam Chair, and yes, Mike Standard, that's just very good. So like the two water quality things that we just removed and then changed in that section, I would make the same changes in that show to kind of make it, you don't need to do it again. I'll make them coincide with the new title and the new section. And
forgive me for missing some of the discussion, but I'd like to just ask the growers. I know when we started talking about where fish runs were on the coast, people got really crabby. And I'm curious about the obtaining accurate and detailed annual production and revenue data from all growers, whether or not any of that is considered proprietary. And then other information about the actual business practices. Does that freak you guys out?
Senator, where are you? Page 6?
I'm on page 6. Immediate implementation, the last bullet in that, obtaining accurate and detailed annual production and revenue data from growers. And I'm just asking the rhetorical question. It's you all that have to cough up the data. But I know that when fishermen were asked where some of the best grounds were, they got real pissy real fast.
So as a grower, as a company, we're, most of our property that we farm is already on ODA property.
Okay.
So we're providing the production data to them. We're fairly comfortable with that because they have rules in place that prohibit them from releasing it.
Aggregate, but not...
Unless it's aggregate.
Yep.
Revenue is a number that ODA calculates off of that. Knowing my boss, getting revenue out of him is would be a fight.
That's the way it is for me, too.
Yeah, I know you're...
The only time I ever told anybody about what we do actually was through for Alex, because I knew he would... He's the one person I could trust that would take care of it correctly.
And
but
I,
we are very tight with.
I don't disagree with the annual production that's reported in the aggregate, but I'd certainly take out the requirement that y'all report your revenue. That seems to me to be a little invasive on the part of government.
It seems like if the state wanted that, most companies pay taxes so that...
They can extrapolate it from other sources. I don't think...
Extrapolate it from the aggregate.
Sure.
I mean, simple math.
One thing that somewhat bothers us, me, we're the only ones in Tillamook Bay, really. So when it's released, even in aggregate, it's kind of...
Obvious.
Obvious, yeah.
So I'm not sure that we even need that particular one because... We're already getting the detailed annual production numbers that was addressed in the last go-around, and that's now in our rules, and so we're getting that. And then we've never actually required, well, the lease program needs to know production to assess fees, but we've never asked for revenues. We figure that out ourselves, so...
So eliminate.
We're not really asking for that either, so I think that that whole bullet probably could be taken away.
Is everybody good to eliminate that third bullet?
Yeah.
Any objections?
Just to answer Mike asked how
I
we
asked
report.
Him about do they report to ODSW like your commercial fishermen do?
No, we every quarter we get a sheet from ODA or DSF, whoever has it at the time, and we report whether it's bushels, gallons, dozens.
So does ODF&W track any of this like they do fish stocks?
They do the wild harvests, but not from the American.
I'm just wondering if there's you know, that information's going somewhere else as well. Or.
I think we already addressed this in the first bill, so I think we can strike that one out.
Is everybody good to strike that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You good, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
So if Beth is keeping up her relentless march through this, we're now at long-term implementation.
Yes. Long-term implementation. So this is the high priority goals for this section that are on a long-term goal. I don't know if you want me to go through them one at a time. It might take a while, or if you guys just want to point out if you have a question or an issue with any of the wording.
Okay.
So, I wonder, can I revisit the last issue? I'm sorry. I was just thinking while we were talking
Please.
About this. So I'm a bit confused because I thought that one of the reasons we were asking for this last bullet wasn't to do it to, you know, try to get proprietary information, but it was to get the aggregate value of this industry to the state.
You were trying to quantify.
We're trying to quantify both production and then some sense of prices for different product forms so we understood the value of the industry. Because I thought, tell me if I'm wrong, but I thought that we were having conflicting numbers. Because some of the, I thought ODA statistics were very much under-reporting the actual value. So it's making the industry look very small relative to other industries in the state and the coast. And I thought that was actually one of the intents of this bill, I thought there was wording in the, again, I should pull that sheet. But I thought that was one of the intents, was to get accurate statistics. So you guys are just saying we do have accurate numbers. So the reporting of ODA, where they say $2 or $3 million of value each year, I realize that's just off of ODA state lands as compared to other lands, right? Private. Or, so this is the problem. How do you get the aggregate from all the lands, county, private, and state,
or
to report that to the state legislature, rest of the state, about the total production and the value of that production?
I can speak for the port side of that real quick. We use numbers from NMFS and from ODFW every time we go looking for federal funds, justifying the port's individual existence. Adding better numbers from the shellfish industry, I'm sorry, would help our cause, and no, you know, without a doubt, the more, it seems like every dollar matters.
Just to whom do you report your production? How is it done? Because
just to Alex once.
Alex is the only one. You don't report to anybody else.
Yeah,
once a year.
Yeah.
This is how many we harvested.
Because Jess is on county land.
Right.
And so he for once asked me, you know, exactly what.
So you've
what
got
was happening.
You've got Jess's. Yours is being reported.
Quarterly, so
quarterly.
Two ODA already, but I guess to that point is, Jess, you did it basically as a favor because Alex asked, not because you're required to report to ODA.
Well, he's required.
Yeah,
oh, is he now?
He's required.
Yep.
Okay, so that's new
I'm
then?
Sorry, for the record.
Sorry, Sabrina Martinez, ODA. I do the shellfish plot leasing.
Okay.
So when did that change to where...
It was in the last shellfish bill.
Okay, so that's a new thing then.
So if county is being reported, yours is being reported, is port leases being reported?
We don't have any port leases, so Coos Bay does. So I would imagine they would.
So who are you missing?
So I'm not missing anyone for production numbers. What Gil's comment is he's trying to quantify the value of the industry in the state.
Right.
And so I can't say, you know, I know how many pounds or bushels are produced. I don't know what the ultimate value is, what the market gate, farm gate value is, or the.
I think having an aggregate for the state is important, even to justify why we're even sitting here, because to let the taxpayers know this is what your industry is doing. I think it's important for a multitude of reasons. But
so
going down to individual, okay, Tillamook did that. If there's some way we could get the aggregate number for the whole state out. I don't know.
So there's no way to find a really smart economist and sit down with the numbers that you get and look at the market and see what that actually is worth without getting their production. And I want to throw one more thing out there. When we were working on the sage grouse issue, there were ranchers over east that the information was very important from those ranchers as to what was happening with sage grouse on their ranch land, which they didn't want to report. I mean, it was a very important privacy issue to them. We ended up passing a bill that protected that information. It could only be used in a certain way. I mean, is there a way that we could protect your information the same way we've done with ranchers in other areas to say if you give them the numbers, it can only be used in aggregate for the... And would you be willing to share if we did? Because we've done that in other agricultural areas.
Statewide.
Statewide.
Not any counties or individual anything. It would have to be in the long.
It would right. would benefit the port
so
districts to have individual numbers, but we would, at least from my point of view, I would totally support a statewide aggregate, and we just use, you know, we have a percentage of whatever whenever we're using the numbers, but I think it's important to protect the individual.
And we have similar rules in fisheries to protect individual processors or individual fishermen in order they can't be identified. You guys are absolutely right.
So
is that already on the books for this industry, or do we need to add this industry to that?
I don't know if that's... That's a fisheries guideline
Steve?
For reporting fisheries. Yeah.
So in House Bill 2204, Section 2 amended the existing statute as follows. So this is a law now. Any person cultivating oysters, clams, or mussels on public or private land in this state shall file an annual report with the State Department of Agriculture before March of each year showing the number of gallons, the bushels or dozens of each species of oysters, and the number of pounds of each species of clams or mussels harvested by the person during the preceding calendar year. And then second point is individually identifiable information procured or furnished to the department in conjunction with obtaining that data is a trade secret and is not subject to public disclosure, but the department may use and disclose the information in aggregated form. That's
already there.
Right.
I guess there's...
So the point that we're talking about really is the revenue. That's what was different here.
There's a difference between what we harvest and what we sell. Because as a farmer, I'm reporting what I harvest. That is then processed and value added and done whatever to, not just by Pacific Seafood or Jesse Hample, but by other companies in the state. So there is a value to that. I get that. I don't see us releasing that.
No, but for the purpose of this, there should be able to be some baseline per pound value added
and Washington uses a...
Is there a formula where the state can estimate?
I think Washington right now
somebody's got to have a matrix somewhere that says...
I want to say they're using $24 a gallon farm gate. That's what it should be worth to the farm. The retailer, it should be around $40.
So what will have to happen if prices aren't reported or revenue's not reported, then some smart economist or someone will have to...
Figure it out.
To figure that out by calling buyers, calling producers, seeing who's willing to share prices for different product forms, of different quality, and come up with an estimate of farm gate value. But it will be an estimate. It won't be the exact number. But probably will be within 10%.
I think that's
so. People feel comfortable with that, that's what will happen.
All right. And we've done for Garibaldi, so if you ask a question, I mean, I can give you a range, but I'm not going to give you a number.
And we use that. We work with our local growers and get that some close info at times.
But we're farmers too, so I mean, we're at the very beginning line. You haven't been to the distributors, to the retailers, it's to put that number on it would be.
So what I'm hearing on the third bullet under immediate implementation is obtain accurate and detailed annual production data from all growers.
We're getting that.
Is that so? So we can just eliminate it. Yeah. Back to your point, it's out of there. Okay.
So do we just want to say create an estimate? Or
We could say take the accurate and detailed annual production records and estimate.
Yeah. So just one last thing. So when reports come out from the state of Oregon to the legislature on what was the production and value, usually we get both numbers, from marine coastal resources, then who's going to do that work of looking up the prices and getting that estimate? Is that ODA? You guys add that to your workload to make that report?
And if we have economists on staff.
And it's not really a value to us for our reporting purposes.
The dollar amount in everything we do, especially within the fishing industry, is important in a lot of ways. So for us to be able to at least add a dollar sign in front of this industry annually to the state, I think is maybe beyond everybody at the table, but it's important to a lot of other cogs in the wheel.
Yeah, but the question, Mike, is who do we assign this task to,
right,
and who's going to pay for it?
Yeah.
How about Biz Oregon? I mean, this is clearly an economic development function.
Or ODF&W with their already, I hate to throw them in the mix, but they're already kind of doing this with normal fish stocks. So, it's already getting done within the fishing industry. If we just add a line to them and say, hey, add this, we'll get you the aggregate for the state.
Might be to object. No, we don't regulate the commercial shellfish growing industry at all.
True. Alex?
That first bullet has already identified ODA as a coordinator and convener. So, I mean, we could be the one to coordinate an economist figuring out what that value is. So I don't see that being a barrier. So really, we just want to obtain revenue data for generate revenue data.
Generate revenue.
Yeah, you'll generate.
So we're not asking the growers to provide that or anyone else. We can just generate that through.
So we're using existing annual production data to produce revenue data.
Estimated revenue data.
Okay. Everybody good?
And ODA can be the coordinator for that.
So if you go into walk into Pacific Oyster, Jess's shop and go see Lu Chin and see what he's charging for a half gallon of oysters, double it, and then multiply that by what we say we harvested, and there you go.
It's a number, though.
You heard it here first.
Is that the formula? There's
the formula. Where does it end?
Okay, you good?
Where does it end?
Well,
that,
no,
but that's,
along,
that's the retail market, right? That's your end dollars.
Okay, so the next item under long-term implementation is the statewide digital GIS database.
My only question about that is we've got an awful lot of guys doing GIS data, and I don't know whether or not there should be some effort on the part of the state to coordinate that. Department of Revenue does it. ODOT does it. We got more GIS guys out running around. I'm just trying to avoid having another agency buy a boatload of equipment to do something that we might be able to coordinate with somebody else.
And I think that that's probably a very good point, and so maybe I didn't word this clearly, because I think that that was the group's intention, that they also felt like there's a lot of people with this information and that it should be just consolidated into a source. So maybe I should work on wording this a little bit more clearly. Is there a different location or...
I'm agnostic as to the location. As long as the work gets done, we're not buying a whole other set of equipment. We're not creating another little empire inside one of the agencies. But to have you do the investigation to see where's the mothership of GIS in this state.
Okay.
I have one on the second bullet point when she's...
Okay.
I would like to see where it says consolidate and make available technical information about estuary habitats, shellfish beds. I'd rather see shellfish plats there.
Yep.
Thank you.
Shellfish beds is the wild stocks. So that's the existing wild stocks. So, that should be an addition then rather than a replace. Hmm.
Okay, so what would we add? Native shellfish beds and commercial shellfish plats or leases.
Yep, two separate things.
I don't mind there being a map so boaters and users can see what's leased to people, but when I see shellfish beds, that's each individual bed within a plat in my terms, and somebody could latch onto that, and all of a sudden Jess and I are running around with GPSs having to furnish information every couple months so they can update a map. And
so we need to distinguish between the commercial plats and the natural beds.
The plats rarely change. I mean, and that's a whole process in itself where the state would update their GIS database anyway.
So we're just talking about tracking natural stocks, not worrying about...
So if I just... 'Cause
in reading that, it wasn't clear to me that that was talking about native. I just assumed it was... commercial.
It just said consolidate, make available technical information about estuary and habitats, native shellfish beds, commercial plats, fish and wildlife use, and current recreational and commercial. That would work. Okay.
Let's jump back up to the bullet right on top of that. Assist counties updating estuary management plans. I presume that means DLCD give them money to do that work, but I don't know whether that means what I think it means. I don't necessarily want DLCD in telling Tillamook County how to manage their estuary.
Plus you got the TEP sitting there and other...
I would read it as DLCD is to assist counties that are updating their management plans.
Not having all of them do it.
Right.
The ones that are, so they will be assisting by providing that GIS
data. If a county is updating their plan, they may contact DLCD, and at that point they are required to help them. That's how I read that. But they're not to go out and
tell everybody to update their management
tell
plan.
Tell them how to do it.
Yeah.
That said, if somebody contacts them and asks for help, your fear may come true.
So you say updating those counties. Assist those counties updating estuary management plans.
Yes. That's perfect, Alex. Thank you.
Assist those counties that choose to ask for your assistance.
Okay. Anything else on long-term implementation? Well, we've gotten through one
section. I'm providing identities of ownership. I'm assuming that's whether it's a state or a county, not the individual grower, or is it the individual grower that's leasing a plat?
Tell me where you are.
It's the third bullet. Or
provide available information that identifies the ownership of tidelands?
Yeah.
This is DLCD should consolidate information that provides the information identifying ownership of tidelands. It's kind of actually.
I guess ownership, because technically an individual or company can't own tidelands in Oregon, except for very few at least. To me, that says it would be this is a state of Oregon or this is a Port of Coos Bay ownership. It wouldn't identify the individual grower. Not that I'm necessarily opposed to that.
Like we own submerged lands, even though the Port of Coos Bay owns submerged lands, even though they're not being used for shellfish production,
right.
But we own them.
I think where that, in my recollection, is that came out of one of the recommendations from the broader aquaculture task force. Gil, do you remember that? So we're trying to help new interested potential growers, and they come in and say, gosh, I'd like to grow oysters there. Who owns it? And that's what that was about.
That just means DLCD is the holder of the information, and that's where somebody would go to find that out.
So is it state land? Is it port land?
Yeah,
is it federal land? Is it county land? Not Pacific or Jesse Hempel or down to that detail. That's not the intent. That information is available, obviously, already. But
it's already available at the county level and a bunch of other levels.
So I think the intent here is DLCD is going to be the holder of the information. If somebody wants to go look, they can look, and they'll tell them who owns it, right? Okay.
So does that mean they have to go hunt down the information if they don't already have it? Because I know there's a lot that are probably held in county levels right now. So are we directing them to start hitting every county courthouse in the state and compile this info?
Well, and the direction is to develop a statewide digital GIS database. So the answer is yes.
Roger.
And what do we mean by encumbrances on state-owned tidelands?
Easements are an encumbrance. Yeah. There's an easement across a piece of tideland for cables or pipelines, whatever it may be. So any kind of easement would be an encumbrance, I would guess.
Would that include any liens against the properties that were held in?
State-owned, there can't be a lien.
Can't be a lien on a state-owned.
Okay. Anything else?
Okay, anything else? So the next one was the memorandum of understanding to create a removal fill exemption, or if that's not able to be executed, a general permit to provide an expedited processing timeline. Okay. The next section is in the enhancing shellfish production. The first items up here is the Tillamook Bay pilot program to use existing resources to expand that to the other areas, the remaining resources.
And Senator, the reason that came up is there's more money in that fund than Tillamook is going to spend on their pilot program. So this is.
I know you're just trying to steal my money.
I am. No, but it's because it, there was an excess amount of funds there.
Okay, the next one is the Moleskine Broodstock Program. The legislature should appropriate $570,000 biennially to conduct necessary breeding research.
Only, I realized in reading this that I had edited this, but I forgot to give you the edit that I thought to make this complete. Because this is, this first sentence is said it's critical to support the restoration and conservation of native species. But the other half of that is to support the commercial production of shellfish, not just the restoration and conservation of native species. So it's both those things.
Okay, long-term implementation, ODFNW should continue to prohibit the intentional and deliberate introduction of non-native species. However, ODFNW should investigate the risks of removing additional species like manila clams from the list of controlled non-native restricted species.
Again, I'd like to remove the word investigate the risks and maybe change it to should investigate effect or potential benefits even.
I'd go for effects.
Yeah.
So ditch risks and put effects?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody good with that?
Okay. So this next section would now be called to understand the impacts of ocean conditions. Mm-hmm. And then the first one up here is the state should conduct scientific research on the potential impacts of ocean acidification. This is currently conducted at the Whiskey Creek Shellfish Hatchery, and this is a $280,000 biennial appropriation.
And these prices have come from OSU?
In consultation with Whiskey Creek.
Okay.
So you, I think you guys have a copy of...
Cool. I just don't want to throw somebody drowning 10 feet offshore at 6 feet of rope. That's...
Okay.
The next one is the state should support Oregon Science Trust efforts to establish a coastwide network of monitoring stations.
Giant problem with that one for me. I don't want to create parallel universes where we have OSU tasked with doing certain things that they're delivering on responsibly and well. And I don't know if the Oregon... Ocean Science Trust is going to do their own monitoring, whether they're going to contract with OSU. I just see this fracturing into a jillion little fiefdoms, and I'd rather have us support the experts that are already doing this work and fund it adequately than create a jillion other little less efficacious operations. Doctor, I would look to you for your guidance on this.
We're both looking at you.
Well, good point. But the Ocean Science Trust, we had a 2-day, Steve was there, a number of people, I don't know if anyone else in this room is there, but this was a high priority for the Ocean Science Trust, right? So the question is and Steve, with the monitoring of coastal blooms and algae, that was also another effort of the Coastal Trust to support this.
Does the Coastal Trust have resources to do this work?
And they're going to be coming into the legislature, and they're going to be looking at money that we want to do this and other things. And I swear, I've had this conversation now 3 times today. People say, well, we'll just take it out of the general fund. What general fund? I mean, we could be in serious trouble. And having a whole bunch of hyper-redundant activities that are all funded from the same diminishing pot makes zero sense to me, and I will object to it in the Ways and Means process.
So your argument is strike this and let them make the case themselves.
Yeah.
And they can coordinate with other groups in the state, including the state agencies and others in their work.
Yeah.
Separate it from this initiative.
Separate, sure. Okay. Understand.
So are we striking the whole idea of monitoring, or just striking the Ocean Science Trust reference in this piece?
I'm okay leaving some kind of monitoring in. And
they support the establishment of a coastwide network.
No. That means money, and I want to know who's going to do it. And I, if it's vague, that's an opening for the... I don't want us to be cannibalizing each other in the name of monitoring. So we got every little Tom, Dick, and Harry with a bucket out monitoring and coming to the legislature saying, give us $500,000 to do it. And I'm sorry to be so bitchy, but there just isn't enough money to duplicate this over and over and over again because everybody's little fiefdom wants to do it.
Okay, so how do we word it then?
Well, I would like to... go back up to the first bullet. We're already asking for $280,000 to maintain existing monitoring efforts to look at the impacts of ocean acidification. So that's one pot of money. The second pot of money is to support the Ocean Science Trust. And Beth
this
is...
one, sorry, just this is also the one in this section we moved over the HAB monitoring from that other section. And so this would be now moved into this section.
Sure.
Another pot of money. Right. So I guess this becomes a matter of priority. Do we want to continue to support the existing ocean acidification work? Do we want to add this on top of it? And then do we also want to add the algal bloom monitoring? So this is just this is a matter of priority is what this is going to come down to. And I'm deferring to the woman who sits on Ways and Means, which is not me, to help guide us to where a reasonable request will come. So I take what the senator says quite seriously, but I also understand, you know, the existing work on ocean acidification is important to continue. So I'm looking to you all for guidance here.
I think it's just a bigger, I mean, it's a huge problem. The senator hit it on the head. We've identified, even when we're going through our individual things, so much redundancy that other agencies are doing this.
And again, the focus of this is shellfish. I mean, that this task force is assigned to work to help support an industry. Are we getting a little too far afield here with this? And I understand, Dr. Sylvia, the need for the Ocean Science Trust to look for, you know, financial support, but is this it?
Well, I think Senator Betsy...
Made it quite clear
the problems if you do this in terms of cannibalizing each other. Okay. Choice of her words. So, given that, I could see why we would strike it, right? Because it's not a direct request to do something directly for shellfish. It's more of an indirect issue. Having said that, this is the kind of language in a preamble or something that you say in terms of, I don't know.
This could come back to a statement that we put out that supports the water quality issues we've discussed, for the work that the Ocean Science Trust is doing. Maybe we create a document that memorializes these things that we're moving into a different arena. How would that be?
That could be, yes.
How does that sound?
We actually addressed that. We said the overview of this entire document was kind of brief, and so maybe there is some rationale to put more of these things into that overview so that they are captured there at the beginning without being specified as we're asking for money for X, Y, and Z, but just note that these are important aspects of this entire effort.
Okay.
I'm just looking through, I mean, we're asking for what, at least $1.5 million?
We're going to get to that as we get to the end.
This one doesn't even have a number on it, so.
And I think we're going to strike that second bullet.
Cool.
Okay, so then going in here is the HAB piece that is on page 8 at the very bottom there. That would be moved over under that other, the ocean conditions tab.
Sorry to go back one. Are we going to strike that or move it to long-term as opposed to immediate implementation? Is there monitoring for ocean acidification?
do you want it in the same section? Is what I heard is in some kind of a sentence at the end, like where we talked about like the next step of the Shellfish Initiative would be to be looking at things like the ensure clean water, protect and restore the, we could even call out if you want to, the Ocean Science Trust, but ocean acidification monitoring. Is that what you're thinking?
I just was questioning if we're taking it completely out of the section, so then, anyway, never mind.
I think to your point, you know, and Senator, you'd stepped out for a second, but I think there's concern on the issue of water quality and the issue of continuing to acknowledge the work of the Ocean Science Trust. Do we put forth some statement in this process that says these things are important, but these aren't things we're going to address right here in the immediate? These are things for biennium away.
Water quality is important, but I don't want to start specifying who's going to do the work.
Right, that's what we're saying.
I'm cool with that.
But it's an acknowledgement that for this industry, water quality is important.
Yeah.
And for this industry, the work of the Ocean Science Trust could have significance. This isn't something we're going to go back.
So could Claire's eighth graders.
There you go.
It could be worded as such as, you know, like studies done by such as the studies done by this group or that group, mm-hmm. if we really wanted to call a group out. But
boy, I object to calling anybody out. No, it'll never end.
Yeah.
Okay. You roll a nickel across the floor and everybody hits it. And I just don't want to do that.
Okay. Moving on.
Socioeconomic costs and benefits. The immediate implementation here is the baseline survey and economic analysis of Oregon molluscan shellfish industry.
And we're going to have to strike some of this because some of this information we're not going to gather. So I would say update this accordingly to our prior conversation about proprietary information.
There is, and I wish I could remember her name now, there's a federal study doing this right as we speak, this first bullet.
What's her name?
Yeah.
I made a real impression on you here.
Bill's working on that, sir.
Yeah.
That was Carol Engel.
That's
right.
What it was.
So that...
That's more on the regulatory. Right?
Well, actually, the survey does include... several of these things, but this is also one of those things. I'm sensitive to proprietary information, but yeah. The way we've written the grant is we've written it so I suppose we need to be able to identify organizations.
Right, and this and a study like this would be done the same way.
It
would
they're already doing it.
I don't know. I haven't seen this. I don't know.
Like I said, it was not inclusive of all these items. I mean, specifically, we were looking at regulatory impacts. Yeah. So the background information, for example, I don't think we had any questions about the facilities, about the costs. We asked you about how you were raising the oysters, but I'm not sure all this information is included in.
There is a lot on everything. I would like to see it cross-referenced because I think my recollection, you cover a lot of this.
But we
would definitely drop that
it,
amount.
But it's a bit to start.
Yeah.
As I shared, though, the information really isn't going to be ready until we finish the rest of the research that we're going to be doing. So functionally, I'm not sure how appropriate it might be.
But is that 1 year, 5 years, 10 years?
No, it's going to be 2 years because we're also including trout.
But so by the time this passes and goes through and the study is organized and data collected, yours will be out anyway.
Yeah, and I don't want to appropriate state money in a constrained fiscal environment if this is an earned grant that OSU was able to get from the feds.
And Western Regional.
I'm sorry, we're going to need your name on the record.
Bill Hanshoemaker.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's evening.
This just hits right at the heart of the redundancy issue we keep coming across.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, let's not be redundant.
And it's great information, but if it's already happening, I don't know why we need to call it out.
Well, I haven't seen it, so here's my only concern. I haven't seen this survey and whether it addresses a lot of these questions. And I'll just raise a comment that we were trying to look at Oregon oyster industry data a couple of years ago. And there had been a regional study done by the Oregon Shellfish Institute, right? I mean the
Pacific
Shellfish Institute. And Oregon had the worst, did not report most of the data. So they figured they covered about 20% and could not look into the broader economic impacts of the Oregon oyster industry. And it was a big blank in the study. So Washington had good data, California had pretty good data, but Oregon did not. So it left this hole about what are the real economic impacts of this industry. And that was one reason this is in here, is because the inability to get a really good survey. So since I haven't seen this survey.
And the other issue is how the statistical analysis is going to be conducted, specifically because we have such a few number of growers and we're doing Washington, Oregon, and California, it may not be separated out unless it becomes statistically significant.
So I wonder if you could do the primary, secondary, and indirect effects of the Oregon shellfish industry with this survey. Again, I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it does.
You just sold it out, so you're probably more familiar with it than anybody here at the table.
My question to are you surveying all growers as well? I mean, how broad is your scope?
I gave her 12 growers that I identified by bot larvae. So I'm going for the active growers that are in Oregon.
And what do we do with this data? I can understand that if you're looking for grants, knowing the cumulative positive effect of the industry would be really important. But you go to 2 years worth of analysis, and who looks at it to what beneficial outcome?
If you're asking about this particular grant, this is going to be lumped together with other efforts that are going on nationally. And so it's not directed for Oregon specifically. We're just a component of that, of this proposal.
But the grower, I guess my point, there's a potential that some of this is covered to get us a start.
Yes, there is.
So, you
and what was her name? I was going to see if
Carol.
I had...
Carol.
I think part of why we were doing this was to figure out what the impact of the industry is on the economics of the state, and right. we have holes. So I think that was why we had it in here, to try and figure out what the impact is. So I don't know if we need to reinvent this or if we move forward with what we've already got here and look to this survey to augment or start there and add what we need on top of it. You guys are the experts.
Well, but I think Senator Johnson asked the right question. What do you use this for? Why is it of value, right? So typically we do this because, for example, if you look at the fishing industry, we do it because we want to know what are the impacts and value and benefits of the industry and the major issues. So how big is it? Does that matter? How much employment is there? What the direction in the future is this industry heading?
Is it growing?
And is that important to let the legislature and the Coastal Caucus and others in terms of making decisions about this industry and supporting it?
It is, but I can tell you that's a sword that cuts two ways. When we did some of the research that people got so cranky about to find out about fishing stocks with respect to the implementation of marine reserves, there were people that were using that data as a sword and a shield. And so I'm just trying to figure out, when we're all said and done, is it to bolster the port looking for grants to build new wharfs? Is it for the growers to justify prices? Is it for scientists to know what ocean conditions are? I'm just trying to figure out what we're really looking at.
All
of the above.
And the state's overall economic value.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But
so if,
go ahead.
Well, if our goal is to try to find out what's the condition of the industry, I think you can do that pretty easily and say that there are a number of sources of funding. In this case, you're feeding into national data, but the Oregon data will stand on its own, I presume.
Maybe not. That
okay.
gets back to the point of how the statistics are actually being conducted.
Okay, I give.
So I can't speak to
that. Nice effort, though.
Moving on, thank you.
No, Dr. Sylvia.
But
yeah, I interrupted you, and I've folded. I've ceded the playing field. I've capitulated.
you folded, so I got an ace. I'm holding. No, So I no, that's my. I think we're done with the discussion. So if it's important to this group and to the state to have a good economic understanding, a baseline understanding of this industry, to make policy decisions, to understand the importance of the coast, of the industry, its trends and issues, then you do a study like this. If you think, if we don't have, particularly if we don't have a good baseline study, if it's argued that we have a very good baseline study, all I was pointing out that I don't sense we have a good baseline study. And the efforts that have been done to create that were not successful.
It also seems to lay the groundwork, if this truly is going to be a task force that has impacts into the future for the next 2 to 3 to 4 biennia, this baseline information may become more important than just a one-off for this session, which we hope this is not intended to be. We want this to continue on for a period of time. So it seems to me the baseline data may become important in that regard as to whether the industry is growing or shrinking, what are the economic impacts on each community. And that's where the conversation, I recall, started. Are we good? Okay. And we'll look forward to what comes out of your study as well to augment this. How's that?
Okay.
Ms. Riley.
Conduct an aquaculture or commercial shellfish marketing study to evaluate marketing sales opportunities.
And this could, I'm wondering, this could fall in Biz Oregon, I'm assuming. This is kind of the work that Biz Oregon does. Mm-hmm. They're the marketing folks. Am I off base here?
Fall into what?
The Business Oregon, oh. Under the bailiwick of Business Oregon.
No, I don't know. No, I don't know how that they operate in terms of funding or supporting or anything like that.
And this is one where I'd say why we should be with PCSGI or PCSGA on that. Mm-hmm. That's one of their charges, and for that matter, they may very well have some funding available through one of their systems.
So we
to help
maybe
with
let's note that we could look to them.
Yeah.
Depending on where this all falls out, right, and how much money we end up coming forward with out of all this, that may be something we try and get done something in somebody else's shop. How's that? Does that make sense?
So are we rewording that?
I just read the
paper. It's on the table.
We're not going to can.
It to say that the entity that would be in it to say industry here is one of the groups that would be.
Yeah, either industry or Business mm-hmm. Oregon.
So I'll put that.
The point I'll make, I agree with Sven. Yes. You know, this is an industry that even from the state of Washington and their organizations can help do something like this. Our focus probably was more on the commercial shellfish clam industry and the fact that most of their product is being sold strictly for bait or other lower value purposes, and we were trying to look at why haven't we raised it to another level for human consumption, niche markets, and those kinds of values.
And that is a upcoming discussion in Tillamook Bay. I mean, a lot of people are talking about raising it to that next level, so it is a coming industry.
Right, so how can we do that and doing a good market, strategic market analysis, develop the strategies to do that. That was probably the greater. So if you wanted to focus it strictly on just the commercial shellfish marketing, right, and maybe lower the amount, given you're just focusing on that, rather than the oyster industry, which certainly has resources and to be able to do that themselves.
I mean, I can answer the question, cool. Why haven't the guys, especially in Tillamook, done it before?
Yeah.
Regulations.
Mm-hmm. For water quality or
that guy and what they have to do to sell it to for people to eat it.
Yeah.
That's the reason.
Okay.
But it's coming and there's a growing interest in it.
Right.
It's opened up a brand new company's opening up in Tillamook Bay right now in Garibaldi, and that's what they're wanting to go after.
Okay. Which is part of that study.
So this is staying the same.
Edible plant.
That's what I'm hearing.
Human consumption.
No,
with the emphasis. Well, I wanted to Beth's point. She's looking back at the spreadsheet, and when we look at this issue, we had listed ODA, shellfish industry, academia, Biz Oregon, or industry folks, which is PSCGA. But if it's
business changes in
clams, not oysters, that changes the dynamic a little bit because we're not going to look to So how do you want to move this one forward? I'm hearing two different things. I'm hearing what the potential is with clams. Is that the direction we want to go with this one?
I don't know. All I know is that we, in the past, we had a company upstart. He's been selling clams, harvesting clams, selling them for bait purposes. And his business is getting ready to expand. He's getting grants from RDI, and he's a growing business. Mm-hmm. And once they get their thing fully established on a new commercial wharf, I mean, we're talking millions of dollars already invested in this from state, federal, and local, he is interested in going after those. He hasn't done it yet. He knows the roadblocks are there, but he's getting ready to investigate the industry because there isn't one right now.
This is other individuals in this industry that we work with who also have that interest.
Okay.
It's a it's an issue that has come back every like 3 to 4 years. These guys asking help to develop this into a human.
And the market's there. I mean, I know we constantly, as a company, get asked by restaurants to provide them that product, but we can't. And it is simply because the regulations for these little guys to harvest it legally for human consumption, it's too much of a constraint, and some of them don't have the gumption to do it. Mm-hmm. Jeremy does, mm-hmm. and he will succeed, and he will pave the way.
Senator, I think the question here is who's going to do this, and whether it's Biz Oregon or PSCGA or academia or we don't know yet. That's unidentified at this point.
Well, does $50,000, I'm just looking at the amount and knowing what I know about consultant costs, is this company specific? So we're doing a study for the ABC Oyster Company or the ABC Cockle Company as opposed to a
clams.
More generic? I mean, I don't know whether we're setting ourselves up to do a whole bunch of little individual studies for company-specific activities, or whether we're looking overall. I don't know what $50,000 buys us. It says, yes, the critters exist. Yes, there are people that will eat these and restaurants that will serve them. But I don't know what it tells us. But the regulations will kill you if you try to do it. I don't know what we're buying for 50 grand.
But that's
not a lot.
Huh? Not a lot. But it's to answer, again, you asked the right question, so it's to answer those questions. It may indeed be, you guys may be right, that a lot of the industry's done their market homework. They have buyers ready to buy. It's a regulatory problem that the costs of regulation, water testing, whatever the exact issues here, are too high given. So you may end up having need for discussion with the regulatory agency.
So we're going to spend $50,000 to tell ourselves we already know we have a regulatory problem.
Well, that's what they're saying. Mike is saying we already know the problem. It's not. They've already done market homework. It's a regulatory. That's what I'm hearing, right? That it's a regulatory.
And I don't know that. I want to defend Alex a little bit. I don't know that it's a cost. It's a what you need to do, whether it's icing and containment and protecting.
It's the process.
Yeah, the process. So. I'm not saying that's not needed, but that's what's preventing the little
small
guy,
business folks from getting started. I don't think we need a consultant to tell us anything with this. We just need to recognize that it's a coming industry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because if it's a coming industry, and let's just use Garibaldi as an example, and Garibaldi would be the sponsor, and you could go to Biz Oregon and say, we've got a business development activity, and here's what they're going to do, and here's the size of their boat, and here's the size of their ice house, and blah, 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 that would be unique to that company.
That's right. We're already doing that. We already have a meeting next week.
I'd rather set aside $50,000 for a fund or a grant to help some little company that applies and jumps through the hoops to get there than to study what I feel comfortable
and we got
saying
a couple
we know what
things.
The problem
is. We have an Office of Small Business Assistance whose job is to do exactly that.
The SBDCs are helping out huge right now.
There's two people in the Secretary of State's office that do that work already. And we do have Biz Oregon whose job is to help these businesses get launched.
And again, this
well.
Business has already gotten a grant and getting started, so it's there. So I think we just need to acknowledge it, but I don't see us needing to have somebody tell us that we already know, like the Senator said.
How about support aquaculture and commercial shellfish marketing studies to evaluate marketing and sales opportunity? And that way we've captured it, we haven't, and you can even leave the next sentence in.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunities to improve industry success and economic opportunities, and then just delete the $50,000.
Yeah. And whether it's Pacific Shellfish Growers or Biz Oregon or the Office of Small Business Assistance, we've got, yeah.
The mechanisms.
RDI has been huge. You're helping out.
Yeah, port marketing grant. I don't know. We don't need to specify the source.
Food Roots has taken interest in the whole program as well.
Okay, cool.
Okay. We're good. Okay, so the next one is a study that would document the cost to the aquaculture industry due to ocean acidification and the benefits resulting from research and outreach to help industry address ocean acidification.
To me, we can.
Does that data not exist already, Dr. Sylvia? I mean, I remember the week at Whiskey Creek when they went from billions of larvae in production to zero. And I don't know whether or not in your previous work, OSU's previous work at Whiskey Creek, there's any generated data.
There is generic, I would say this, there's generic data about the potential value that looks at numbers of animals that may have been lost and potential impacts to them, but it's not overly specific. So the question is, do we need very specific information on this, or can we rely on the general information we already have? I would argue we probably can rely on the general information we already have.
That would be where I would be, because the conditions of each one of these would be slightly different, I would assume.
I think the thinking was looking through the whole production process and how much the benefits or costs have been at every level, from oyster seed to ultimate market. Production, field production, and then market value.
You know, the one other thing about this is under socioeconomic costs and benefits, this was such a long shot. I would characterize this as a three Chardonnay conversation. But right after Sendai was wiped out as an oyster growing place, there was conversation about sending seed and larvae from here back to Sendai to try to help them rejuvenate a thriving industry that was wiped out. And I don't know whether or not in increasing oyster production worldwide that it would be valuable to consider any of those kind of hand across the ocean outreaches. I don't know whether that oyster industry has come back. I don't know whether or not we the U.S. played a role.
Good question. No, I don't know either. Are you asking me to this?
I just didn't know anecdotally whether any of the industry guys or any of the academicians knew what had come of that, because we had talked about it right afterwards, the catastrophe in Japan, sending that seed and larvae back as a gesture of goodwill, because apparently there's some historic nexus about larvae coming from Japan to us to help kickstart our industry.
Well, and that's happening. So we brought in varieties of Japanese oysters that we think would do better. They're still Pacific, but they're varieties that would do better under warmer conditions, right? We have them at the Hanford Marine Science Center and are doing testing. So we had to hold them in quarantine for, two or three years, before they could then be released to industry to evaluate. But so this has been ongoing, this relationship with Japan, both helping and supporting each other.
But if we're trying to strengthen an industry here, we're trying to get global production, I mean, that maybe isn't our charge, but it seemed to me that having that Japanese relationship had some value.
Yeah,
and I would much rather have oysters go back and forth across the Pacific than I would our precious crustacea that starts with a Dungeness.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, it's just a curiosity for me.
Well, let me find out. I'll find out and send an email to the group.
Cool.
All right.
Okay. So, on this bullet under long-term implementation, do we want to sustain this?
I would leave it and just take the money out.
Okay, Beth.
The next section is actually done, because we moved the HAB piece over to the ocean conditions section and removed this piece of it. Okay, so increased public education outreach, enhanced recreational opportunities. The first thing here is an added dedicated staff person for outreach and education to ODF&W. It's $150,000 to $160,000 biannually.
You know, the one thing that didn't occur to me until I was sitting here right now is that is we've been talking about enhancement, and enhancement is lovely. What we haven't been talking about is enforcement. And I think that over time, folks currently in production are going to see, and maybe I'm just barking up the wrong tree here, but more trespass, more damage, more people not understanding what it takes. They already are. So I don't know, when we've been cutting some of the dollar amounts from this, I wouldn't mind beefing up ODF&W's ability to actually have fish and game guys out in the coastal communities watching for vandalism, watching for over-harvesting, watching for those activities that deplete stocks or hurt habitat.
That's great to hear that, Senator Johnson. On page 10, the first bullet, we identified that. Mm-hmm. So that's we just identified it as a long-term rather than an immediate.
Maybe we change that to an immediate.
It could be moved to an immediate.
Yep.
I'm a firm believer that education goes hand-in-hand with enforcement.
With enforcement.
Because, you know, a lot of what we see on the coast is you know, there's some mischievous stuff, but there's a large percentage of it, too, is tourist-related, not being aware. They're just trampling right in and doing something. But I'm a big fan of education and enforcement going hand in hand.
Yeah, it's both. So, you know, my staff is eyes and ears on the ground taking a look at compliance with the regulations. And I have that difficult job with them of making that decision between a teachable moment, which is education, versus an enforcement action. And it's tough. Because some people, you can tell when someone's handing you a line or if they're trying to get away with something, and where it started to lean itself into an enforcement.
Well, there's lots and lots of education
needs for education.
We're working with Pack Oyster and the school district and trying to create an education experience down in Bay City there. So, I mean, there's those opportunities to create education moments. Yeah.
But I forgive me for not having seen that enforcement piece, but it, when Jess said we're farmers, it occurs to me how much stuff we have on the books to protect farmers from trespass, from cattle rustling, from malicious vandalism to irrigation systems, stuff like that. It seems to me that if we're serious about protecting and helping this industry, that there ought to be that very robust enforcement piece of it, that if you get busted putting bad stuff in the water, you get busted with a whole sack of juveniles that you're not supposed to have, there ought to be some ramifications.
Yes.
I would suggest we move through the public education piece, and then, Senator, when we get to the next page,
I'd beat that
and
up
look
and
at
give
Oregon
them some
State.
More money.
The question then, what is it, Oregon State Police or is it ODF&W? Who is the enforcement?
It's OSP, Fish and Game Division.
And then how much do we want to beef that up?
$50 million.
Sold, Americans. But think about that while we're finishing up the education piece. And then if that's something we really are interested in doing, let's put a couple of folks in there.
Okay, so the dedicated staff person for outreach and education. Are we moving on? The next one is directing ODF&W to work with ODOT, Parks and Recreation Department, and port districts to increase opportunities for recreational harvest by improving parking areas, regulation signage, access trails.
And again, that's going to come down to what the budget looks like.
I'm asking a question of the agency folks because I don't know the answer. ODF&W has this R&E fund that is money off fishing licenses. Do any of those R&E projects speak to ocean habitat and oysters or?
It's very tough. That's a great question. And we have this fund, but it's dedicated for use predominantly for fishing. And that's the problem that we have in terms of being able to use access to those dollars. It has to be coupled with actual angling as well.
Well, then I think maybe we might want to change that to loosen up those R&E bucks a little bit, because you're down to now doing R&E projects that are not well thought of. I mean, in some cases, the community embraces it and thinks it's a great idea to build a whole new generation of little baby anglers. In other cases, the projects suck. It's a technical term. And I would much rather broaden the definition and get young folks interested in the mariculture.
I think that would be helpful. And again, you know, it would help with mariculture, but again, our intent here as well is to provide access for recreational clamming as well, so folks don't have to trespass as they do now in Siletz Bay or down on the edge of Coos Bay or park on a highway and open their doors. Trying to create some waysides or gravel parking lots, improved trails, those kind of things. Not only for, in fact, I don't know if mariculture wants that, if you want people to get to your plats, but certainly we'd like to improve the access for recreational clammers to be able to get down into the tide flats and back to their vehicles safely.
And I don't want to shoot anything, you know, potential ODFW positions or anything, but, you know, looking back, going back with the 150 to 160 for dedicated outreach person, I see what OSP goes through. I mean, we can throw two more officers at the state, and they're still not going to be enough to cover everything because, you know, elk season, they ain't near the water. They're all shifting up sure. in the hills, and they're just short-staffed. And adding one person for outreach to ODFW, would that be as effective as putting that money into programs like Claire's and the schools and some other things where that outreach, we've got those young kids that could be part of that outreach program? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. But
well, we're talking short-term, long-term. So what is your priorities? The priority education or enforcement if we can't do both?
Yeah, we need
and what I'm hearing you say is maybe we can't do both. So which one do you think is the most important for the first biennium and then make sure in the next one we continue to move down that road?
I'd vote for enforcement because we get double bang for the buck. Those are also officers. They're troopers. They can bust a drunk driver. They're not just down looking in your clam bucket.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm bringing this up here because we have this position up here, and is that a priority, or is it working with the school districts that we already have and putting that towards enforcement? I don't know. As we're looking at being efficient with the money that we are out requesting through this, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the right spot for it. And no offense.
Would the fund that you're talking about that needs to be loosened up a little bit, if you put loosening that up as a goal, would he be able to accomplish some of this with that money that's already allocated to him? Mm-hmm. And could we take this money and do what Mike's saying?
Steve, what's your opinion on that? I believe that would be the case. If we loosened up the R&E language and let you do enhancement projects, restoration and enhancement projects in mariculture.
Well, my sense is what we were trying to articulate with the second bullet was literally to provide walkways, driveways, trails,
infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. The first bullet was to address the education outreach issue, and so we drew the distinction between those. So my sense, or really my inkling, would be to keep the infrastructure together. You know, the example that we built up in Garibaldi, that walkway is what we're talking
about,
those kind of things. That's huge. That provides a big thing. But we need that in Coos Bay. We need that in Siletz Bay. We need those kinds of things. We might be able to do that with R&E dollars if the language was loosened up for recreational harvests. But I don't know if that's, you know, appropriate for mariculture. I don't know if you guys want the public coming down on looking at your
farms. Like that stairway, that was a partnership. I mean, you had the Confederated Tribe involved, you had the state. There were a lot of players in that, and those opportunities are there. And, you know, letting port districts or something coordinate with you guys to take lead in some of that, there's a lot of opportunity for that up there.
Let me ask the resident expert, because I can feel his beady little eyes looking at me. Mr. Rollator. If we went after some of that R&E money for recreational, are the R&E guys going to have a stroke?
Are you going to end up in my committee? Yeah.
They're going to have a pissy fit, but I would do anything to help them.
Joe, for the record, we need your name.
For the record, Joe Rollator from Walport. I'm a port commissioner now. I hear the same thing in my community about the worthlessness of many of the projects. And the whole idea that shellfish wasn't included in the beginning of R&E is ludicrous. So,
But they'll be cranky.
They'll be cranky if you went after any of their money. But you got $1 million for the Oregon plan once out of R&E.
Well, I mean, these are projects of significance. The one that is being undertaken in Central Oregon that's not popular is a $380,000 project. So, I mean, this is not insignificant money.
Okay. So, what is the consensus? Finger.
Do you want me to recap what I have written down to see if
Please.
That is the consensus?
That would be great.
Okay, so for the second bullet, I have just adding on a sentence that would say, broaden the definition and allowable use of R&E dollars to be used to improve access to recreational clamming opportunities. I don't see anyone shaking their head. No, so I think that's...
Well, that covers your second bullet, right?
That's the second bullet.
The second bullet.
So yeah. I would like it to also address the first bullet. Or could on the education side, maybe not provide a dedicated staff, but allow whether
We're
it's
talking about the R&E funds too.
Yeah, if it's educational,
it's changing the color of that money. Very, very much produced.
If we're putting in parking lots, it would be nice to put in a little interpretive sign center to be able to help. You know what I'm saying? The education doesn't necessarily need to be feet on the ground. A good signage program. So if that money's freed up to be able to put in a little education kiosk in with a parking lot and that type of stuff, I think would be huge.
Right. Mike, that's the third bullet. So as we articulated these three things, we recognized there was a need for an education outreach person to design the materials, make brochures, you know, engage in social media, engage with the schools, you know, one person to do all of that kind of stuff. The second was to provide access, safe access, so that you're not trespassing and not putting yourself in danger. And the third one was the education outreach signs at those particular sites, well articulated, you know, by Claire. So we put together those.
My question would be then is that I see the outreach signage and that kind of stuff going hand in hand with enforcement and everything else because
But tag them if they don't know what they're doing.
Well, and it's my firm belief that a large percentage of violations are unintentional. And by posting signs and posting that education piece, it takes care of the need for some of the enforcement. We need the enforcement, but I think they go hand in hand. So I would like to see that part of that, I know it's asking for more money, but be included in the immediate implementation instead of the long-term side of it.
So let me take one more shot. What I'm hearing are three things. Okay? I'm hearing education and signage, I'm hearing infrastructure, I'm hearing enforcement. And my question is, are you looking at rewriting the definition of R&E funds to accommodate all three of those?
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just saying, I have no idea what I'm doing.
I don't think the enforcement side needs to be on the R&E funds.
No.
And that's on the next page. Yeah. I mean, actually, right. We already have that under long-term implementation on the next page. So we're just talking about signage and infrastructure.
And I think they go hand in hand. That's just me personally. And that it just so happens because they go hand in hand that it all ties into the education piece.
Okay, and what I'm hearing you say is the money that we had targeted for that, which is staff, is better dedicated to signage and infrastructure or not necessarily?
I don't know. Steve's going to start throwing stuff at me from across the room if I say anything else, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I just think that it's important that we address those, or at least mention.
Do you have thoughts on this?
When it was set up, the idea was to have somebody at the ODFW office who could work with schools or whatever to help create a lot of these different signs or things like that, work with those in order to use the schools as a direct, this would be my idea, use the schools as a direct avenue to for education, having the students, so not ODFW making the signs themselves, but working with communities to design signs that they thought were appropriate for themselves, sort of, and that's why it was listed, the signage was listed separate from the number one.
Right.
And then to have the schools in all these different cities, bays, then design those signs and put them out.
How much money is in the R&E pot?
$4 million a year.
Okay. I guess here's my, because I really like the idea of high schools and schools being involved in stuff. Why aren't we giving money to programs like yours to do exactly what you're saying, create the signs, get them out there, use the kids to educate other kids, and create things that
can I raise up an issue here? I think what our problem is that if you look in the detail of our table, we've talked about this, we identified money specifically for that purpose.
Yep.
We're looking at the shortened list. It doesn't have all the details, and then we're revisiting the details. If you look back down at that, our recommendation number 25, which fits under the big picture to increase public education outreach and enhance recreational opportunities, it was specifically to design and install the education outreach signs, high priority, long term, and that was directed to the ports.
Yeah, and I think
to ODFW, Parks and Rec.
I think what my point was that
and the educational institutions.
The outreach signs. I think my question was to bring this back around was that. Is that a long-term goal, or does that part go hand-in-hand with the rest of this to a point where it should be included in an immediate issue versus a long-term?
Everything you're looking at was a high priority for either immediate or long-term implementation. This is under immediate.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the third bullet, though.
That was long-term.
Yes.
And I see what you're saying, Steve, but nowhere here does it say give a grant to a high school class to create these things.
Right.
But if
that's what I'm saying.
Depending on
the kids, because we want to educate the young kids of the state to go out and use nature and enjoy nature. Who knows better how to reach kids than kids? You can pay somebody as much as you want, and they'll design a crappy website that nobody will use, or you can let some high school kid who's into computer programming who knows what he's doing and knows what it...
Somebody has to coordinate that.
The teacher.
And that may be a teacher that you have that's very enthusiastic in that school in that particular community, but we may not have a Claire in every community up and down the coast. So the question is, who's going to coordinate all that? If the money flows through the port, then the port decides that they're going to work with the school district to make sure. We do this with fisheries all the time. We have every kid in the school district down south having a salmon on their desk, and ODFW comes in and educates every single one of them. Then they go to the hatchery, and they clip fins, and then they harvest eggs. I mean, so, you know, those. But every community does it differently. So it's really hard in a setting like this where we have broad north to south to say everybody's going to do it like Claire does, because they probably aren't.
No, but we have Claire. And I'm not saying, just let me go for a little bit here. We have Claire. Maybe he's willing to do it, maybe he's not. We already have a couple pilot programs. Why don't we create a pilot program?
Well, we do have the Coastal STEM Hub, and I run PDs for the Coastal STEM Hub. And I know Pinkham and I talked about this initially. I was happy with ODFW kind of running the education piece and kind of running the signs into it. But I run the PD pieces, and I could easily pull together a lot of teachers up and down the coast at all of our major bays and talk about, we just have a shellfish workshop. And
we're
going to
give you each
Saturday
$10,000 and you guys go figure out how to put up some signs and use your kids.
Well, the way we've done it, we've actually gone to our local ODFW and shellfish people and have said, come in and look at our, we put them in groups and they kind of work together in groups of four to create the signs. I mean, we're talking about stuff, the details here, but we brought them in and said, so what's appropriate and what's not appropriate with these signs? And what do we need to do? And then we made a composite of those signs, and those are the signs that actually got out on these are what the students thought were important in the first place, and then what ODFW or other people, TEP or the watershed councils or whatever said, these are important. And then from there, a composite was made, and all the students agreed on it, and we put it out and put it in and went out and installed all these things, and that was kind of the...
I just feel like that has...
And that's the way it was done.
You want to mandate that there's an educational component that includes high school kids doing part of this.
That's not
in our initial detail.
Exactly. And I just feel like that's more of a benefit to the state, is to it gives the kids a purpose. The ones that want to go out and do stuff like this, and you've got groups of kids up and down the coast that are into it, let's give them the funding. We all know education doesn't get what they need.
But we also want to come back to the fact that if we're going to designate $150,000 to ODFW to dedicate a staff person, that staff person could coordinate exactly what you're talking about. If we want to have a statewide program where we use high schools to implement the education
I believe firmly that, you know, there's a lot of opportunities. I love what Claire's doing. I think the opportunity is great there. But I will acknowledge that there needs to be some standardization or some oversight from ODFNW in the process. So, because we had every area writing their own signs, and the message is going to be scattered throughout the state. So,
yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. A pilot program, if Claire's willing to take it on, or he knows somebody else that is, and we do it a one-off with ODFNW, whether it's Steve or the local person, and then for the next go-around, we make it better.
I'm fine.
Okay, so I'll make sure we're all on the same page here.
But don't just, that's
so
just
are we still looking at 150 grand to provide staff for ODFNW?
I think that's what you're getting at, is that he's looking at, is there a way to do this without investing the money in that?
Because I would rather take $500,000 and give it to a high school program than hire four more state employees. And it's not saying they don't benefit the state, but when you give that to a teacher for a program, and with guidelines, obviously, you're benefiting a bunch of kids and a bunch of communities and the future.
Okay, this is a whole nother tack, as you're talking about writing curriculum for high schools, is what you're talking about here.
Good job, Sabine.
The other thing is that we will need a lot of votes to pass this, and if we start calling out specific pilot projects, votes start peeling away. I hate to be that blunt about it.
I'm a big fan of that, but I think there needs to be the central hub for it at ODFNW. So, I mean, I'll vote and push, and I'll do all kinds of stuff to get money for the schools, but to start, there needs to be that.
And I'm not disagreeing that isn't a fabulous idea, because a lot of schools are doing this in spades in other areas. If we want to make it specific to Shellfish and you're going to put it in a bunch of high schools, we're talking about, again, curriculum writing, who's going to manage it. When you impose a program on a high school, it's as good as the person that is doing it, and do they want to do it? And that's when the program will be successful. If you mandate it, it may not be as successful.
I wouldn't want it mandated.
Yeah.
But I totally understand what you guys are saying.
Yeah.
So let me say what I'm thinking this could lead to. If you're looking at trying to par down money at 150,000 or 60,000, this is what I thought you were saying, and I think it's a possibility. And you were to take and remove that particular piece and just left the signage at 50,000 to 60,000, you'd have to make sure you had somebody in place who would know the Shellfish piece to make it all work, and then you would be minus the 150, and you have your 50,000, 60,000. You would have saved money in the long term for what's happening. So if the purpose is to save money, that would save some money. And the Coastal STEM Hub could run something one time, but in the end, I think there is a need for the person at the office, a central person to coordinate all these things. Because I for sure won't be there forever,
if it becomes a program.
Great people.
Here's another idea. Coming back to this, I mean, this is in here because it's been on the table for quite a while. It's been talked about. It's been vetted. How about if we leave the first paragraph the same, but add, and Beth suggested this, instruction and opportunities
for recreational harvest of Oregon shellfish by making information readily available to schools, the public, yada, 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 yada.
Then look at redefining R&E funds, so with a nod to the second paragraph, and then the $50,000 to $60,000 that we already had in here, which was item number 25. A longer term, maybe we make it shorter term.
I'd like to see the signage a little shorter term than long term.
And make the signage shorter term and designate the $10,000 for each bay, and it could be spent either through a school program, through a port program, through a partnership of whoever wants to do it in that particular community.
When I started this whole whirlwind of mess, that was all I was getting at, because I think the education and the signage go hand in hand with the enforcement.
Well, I think the other issue we're ignoring is that you're talking about either enforcement or education. I kind of got that feeling we're talking about either.
Well, I'm looking to the ways and means.
ODFNW or
there's room in here to try both. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't.
R&E, there might
depends
be.
On what happens on November 8th, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah.
So it's possible we can have two tracks here where first scenario, we have to prioritize. Second scenario, maybe there's a little more wiggle room. Who knows?
Can I add one more point? Again, if we look to the Washington Shellfish Initiative, how do they deal with this issue? They have two separate goals. Their overall goal is to educate the next generation about shellfish resources, ecosystem services, et cetera. And they have one that's formal education aimed at the schools. The second one, informal education and outreach aimed at the general public. So they're, but again, they have lots of pages to work back through that. But that's the way they do it.
And if we leave this position at ODFNW in, they could be tasked with two paths. Work?
Yeah. Okay, so I think what we're doing is we are...
You good?
Yeah.
How about long-term we look at a curriculum for all high school students?
That's what I was getting at.
How's that?
I always felt like we kind of left the school side out of it. And I get the whole writing curriculum, but I feel like, I guess I'm stuck in this. We overthink and overregulate world.
This just hasn't been in here.
Right.
So if we add the school's piece... Under the immediate implementation, under the education piece, and ODFNW can oversee that. We'll add schools. But long-term, actually have an educational program like we do for a bunch of other things. But that's that you can't do that without a significant amount of work going into it. But, I mean, Claire can do what he wants.
It was a grant thing. Like, if a teacher chose that they wanted to do this as a program, they could apply for a grant. ODFNW maybe could be the administrator, that person of that.
And that's okay. Then,
without having to create a whole curriculum for the whole state.
About coastal schools. Yeah, maybe all. Okay.
So I think I have. So are we for the first one? We're making sure that it's clear that this would also apply to schools. The second one, we're broadening the definition of the R&E dollars to be used to improve access to recreational clamming opportunities. Then the third bullet point, are we removing that up to immediate implementation? And I'm saying direct ODFNW to work with schools and port districts to develop outreach and educational signs, informing the public about shellfish access locations in the rest of the sentence.
That's what I'd like to see if that's just me.
Is that the rest of the groups?
He votes for me. I love his idea.
Okay. Moving on. We have 25 minutes left.
Okay. Assessing wild shellfish stocks. This one is the shellfish stock assessment team. They currently go once every 8 to 10 years, an additional 120,000 to increase capacity to allow them to do that more rapidly, and then in addition, $60,000 appropriated to every biennium to ODFNW to contract with scuba divers to conduct shellfish stock assessment surveys in subtidal zones.
Do we know that contracting with scuba divers buys us something?
Yes. So when I did Tillamook Bay, our team went up and did the subtidal stock assessment for Tillamook Bay. We discovered, you know, and measured the biomass of clams, cockle clams and caper clams and butter clams. Based on that, we upped the quota and allowed commercial industry to harvest those clams.
Cool. I'm good. Okay?
But that costs a lot of money. It cost us 2 years up there, and the scuba divers cost us about $3,000 a day to do that work.
Is this work adequate? I mean, is the price adequate for the work that needs to be done?
The complaints that we get from industry is that we don't come back fast enough. They would like us to do stock assessments every 2 years, every 3 years. Our job with that team of four is to do all of Oregon's bays and estuaries. Next year, we'll be down in Coos Bay doing the same thing, where there's also a commercial industry moving from bait in cockles to human consumption. We don't have a stock assessment for Coos Bay. And so I'm charged with being precautionary with the state's natural resources. Without a stock assessment, I can't establish the quota.
So is this adequate money to...
It would speed us up. Is
enough?
It adequate to do every 2 years for every bay? No. The last time this was done was 1970 for Oregon. It would speed us up. I could answer
and
that.
And Jess was in third grade.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So the question really is how swiftly do we need to do stock assessments? my judgment as leader of the program is about every 5 to 8 years. We're on about a 10-year rotation now, so I'm trying to speed that up. So that's what this is about.
Changes? Okay. ODFNW should actively work to identify opportunities for meaningful involvement by public and coastal tribes in the shellfish stock assessments, characterization of estuarine habitats, appropriating additional $50,000 every biennium to help the necessary staff time to develop a robust citizen monitoring program.
Well, apropos our opening conversation today, you can identify opportunities for meaningful involvement by the public and consultation with the tribes, just to make sure that the language is consistent. Okay.
So then this is the long-term implementation that sounds like you may want to reevaluate. The Oregon State Police should work to enhance the enforcement of existing commercial and recreational catch regulations, including with working with tribes to find opportunities to share regulatory enforcement, so including consulting with coastal tribes.
And if I were queen, it would go to immediate implementation.
I would agree.
Okay.
Can I raise up an issue on this? Don, when we heard from you at our last meeting about the possibilities of cooperation between the Fish and Wildlife Section of Oregon State Police and the Coquille Tribal Police, have you had any opportunities to talk or think some more about that, or how that might work on these types of education and enforcement in the Tri-Flats?
Thanks, Steve. With a brief conversation that I had with the Coquille Tribal Police Chief about this, the opportunity, to have the conversation exists. Certainly under the umbrella of renewed interagency agreements that occur, cross-deputization and other sorts of thing arrangements that are made between tribal police, county police, municipal police, state police. So it's a matter of just getting it on the docket, so to speak, as a subject area wherein, when these agreements are reviewed, to have some conversation and perhaps negotiation, or at least agreement amongst all of those parties. About the opportunities there may be. Certainly for our tribal police in the patrols that we do, we're in the neighborhood. We're driving right by the neighborhood. So there was a receptive and positive response to at least my introduction of the idea with our police, at least. So, and I can't imagine that it wouldn't be with other tribal police in proximity to estuary, the thing is Confederated Coosa, Don Coos Bay, Umpqua, and then on the Siusla, where they're doing patrol areas already. The only question would be, does that bring a burden to any of the parties? And I would argue that at least at some level there isn't a financial burden. It's just a matter of working it through these interagency agreements.
I can't speak on behalf of the Oregon State Police, but I would venture that they would also.
Yes. My apologies. We're sorry. Trying to get our work done behind the scenes here.
We're asking OSP to enhance what they're doing. Shouldn't we be putting, we put dollar values on other things? We don't have anything here. How is that going to be actioned? Right now, ODA. Pays OSP $25,000 a year to do shellfish patrol work, which is not very much for the whole state. So they've asked us for more in the past, and we have told them that we can't afford that.
How much did they ask for?
Yeah.
I think it was like $75,000 for a biennium, I think is what they asked.
I just arbitrary. I mean, in some cases these are informed. In some cases the pricing is arbitrary. I just, if we're going to pay $150,000 to $160,000 for a outreach and education person, that was the number I slotted in here. They got to have equipment. They've got to have training. They've got to have a car or a truck.
But maybe that would take pressure off your shop if we enhance the other side?
Well, I mean, if we think it's very important, it sounds like we do, and we don't even, we're not even putting a value. We're just saying they should do some more. So,
yeah, I think we put in A because it's not available. We don't know how much it is.
But it sounds to me from this conversation, this is a priority that you all feel is short-term and high. Is that correct?
Yeah. Enforcement as a whole, yes.
Yes.
And like Don was saying, there's, you know, there's the opportunities there for MOUs with tribal police. I know county sheriffs are doing quite a few patrols as it is. So getting to the root of that.
I'm not sure municipal is really engaged in that, the city police, but to some maybe, but certainly the county. Certainly the state, yeah, and potentially tribal.
As we're sprinting to the finish, I would suggest pricing this at $150 to $160.
And for bullet one?
Yep.
Okay.
And move it to short term.
Okay. Everybody comfortable with that?
Yes.
It's a big boost.
So under immediate,
I just want to ask.
I want to make this clear. We're looking at a wild shellfish stock. So do we want to put this enforcement piece broader than wild shellfish stock? I'm assuming we don't want that under wild shellfish stock. We want that under public education, outreach, and enforcement. Maybe we change. How does that sound?
I think that sounds great.
Add enforcement up here and then add 150 to 160 under immediate for
again,
enforcement.
As the clam, human consumption clam industry grows, this is going to be an issue for them as well.
And I just want to make sure on the numbers, Beth, that we're doing everything standardized. We're either doing one time or we're doing biennial.
Everything that is not like the signs for the bays was a one-time cost and everything else was for biennial.
Okay.
Okay, so everybody on board with that one?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay, a fishery scientist should be hired by ODFNW with expertise on clams, other shellfish, and an analysis of impacts to intertidal and subtidal habitats, and this would be $160,000 every biennium.
This replaces Mr. Romero, or this?
No, this would be in addition to our staff or to Oregon State University or to University of Oregon. Right now, there's a situation with Dave Sampson. So Dave Sampson is a professor of fisheries science, stationed at Hatfield Marine Science Center, pay-to-play kind of guy in terms of gaining access to work with him. But his expertise is in fish. We don't have a person like that who deals with.
I'm fine. I was trying to be funny. Yeah. And
okay. Any changes? Restore native shellfish. Direct ODFNW to continue efforts to protect and conserve the three known populations of Olympia oysters.
Okay.
Okay, then the last page is just a list of the task force members and then the meetings that we've had and the agenda items that you covered. This larger table is all of the concepts that were discussed. So the medium and lower priority items were not outlined in that part of the report, but the idea being that they would still exist in this document so that moving forward, they would still be, the work that you haven't done would still be maintained and wouldn't be lost.
As we move forward.
Continued on. And I don't know if there's a, so the changes that were in here, I will make in this document for all of the high priority items that we discussed. I don't know if people are just comfortable with leaving it at that rather than going through each. Medium and low.
I think if you just conform it to the underlying document, we're good.
Dr. Sylvia.
So does the archive, all the archives, do they stay? I mean, the meetings of these minutes and the filming, those all remain on record?
Yes.
As part of this effort?
Yes, and they're all on OLIS. Mm-hmm. You can go look at them anytime you want.
Okay.
everything is there for everyone to see.
How long are they archived?
Forever, I believe. Uh-huh. I don't know. Does it ever go away?
I don't know how long. Off the top of my head, I don't know how long OLIS will stay. I don't think we've reached that point yet because we haven't been using it that long that we're rolling anything off. But even after that point, things get archived in the state
archive.
They're
right down the street in the archive.
The only thing it doesn't show is the heroic drafting work that Beth has been doing behind the scenes.
We have two more agenda items. One, we put a public comment period in here just in case there was anyone that wanted to comment. We have, four people in the audience, and we've included you as best we could. We don't have anybody signed up to testify for public comment, so would the four of you have any lasting brief comments you would like to make as we move forward and adopt this conceptual document? Beth's going to have to rework it to a significant degree, but in concept, moving this document forward. Okay. Well, thank you for your your dedication of time and sitting through another very long meeting. And I guess I would like to go around the room just briefly and see if there are any final comments, and then we will take take action on this process, on this document.
Well, I don't have any final comments.
I can add one. We were struggling in the writing team. What do we call the Shellfish Initiative? And so we have this sentence: the Oregon Shellfish Initiative is envisioned as a multi-year collaborative and cooperative effort. Senator Johnson had some beautiful language in there, called it a multi-biennial constellation.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing? It is.
Okay, I like
so we're on
better.
Board. All right.
Thank you.
We agree, too. We think that this is a future prospect for us in the state, and we appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it. And we look at some of the changes that will come about both in the pilot program as well as this task force on the initiative to help improve this industry in the state of Oregon so that we're not the hindrance as a state agency is perceived to be sometimes.
Thank you. Alex?
Steve, I thought you were going to want to add a tasty morsels back into the overview.
That's good. The shellfish, the task force on tasty morsels. Chief Ivey?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about what kind of remark I might make that can work the word existential into it. I can't. What I want to speak to, though, are what I'm beginning to think about are the next steps in this. One of the things that we talked about is how do we merge our efforts here with other efforts where there are similarities, where there may be overlap or mutual interest. And I'm looking at the Task Force on Funding for Fish, Wildlife, and Related Outdoor Recreation and Education that just completed and published their report, thinking the portion of our work that focused on the recreational aspects of shellfish management, harvesting, and all those sorts of stuff seems to have some relevance to maybe what's going on in here. Certainly agencies in this task force are represented in this room today. So there's one place. And then I think about the conversations that I'm aware of that tribes and state agencies are having around the question of cultural resource management and protection and the burden that falls to Oregon State Police and the Fish and Wildlife Division to take care of cultural resources, whether they're historic properties that are on the since Pioneer Settlement or whether they're prehistoric or the artifacts and sites of antiquity. Trying to figure out ways to complement not only Oregon State Police's efforts at the enforcement piece, but also how to enhance other agencies and their capabilities, whether that's Oregon Parks and Recreation, Division of State Lands, DLCD, and all the others that get involved in land use planning and resource management. So I'm thinking in this as I take this back to the Coquel Indian Tribe and as I try to find a way to interpret this to maybe the interest of some of the other tribes is to step back and take a bigger picture of this thing and see what are the dots in this particular effort that I was involved in and how do they relate to the dots of other efforts so that not only can the tribes be engaged, consulted with, if you will, but might even have some perspectives that would lend itself to how do we move this forward, both in terms of getting the legislature's attention, but how do we move it forward in terms of making it meaningful in its implementation to all of Oregon's coastal communities outside of just the conversation that we had in this room today? So thank you for that.
And I really appreciate your comments in that that is truly the definition of the constellation. I like the word. And truly, you are the representative of all nine tribes here. So I appreciate you taking on that charge to move this information a little further down the road to make sure that everybody's engaged in the conversation at some point. We only can have so many at the table. So we all are a representative of a larger group, and I really appreciate your acknowledgement of that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
I just want to say that it's really been a great process. I really appreciate everyone here who's at the table and who's contributed. I think it's been good to see industry and agencies working together, and as well as the NGOs that I represent. And the fact that conservation has been, I think, foremost from all the perspectives, and recognizing that's really an important part of both the, again, from industry down through all the work the agencies are doing. And I think, speaking for myself anyway, I look forward to when we have a shellfish initiative formally that I can point towards as I write grants to do more conservation work, and that will help us tremendously, because those kind of things make a big difference to granting foundations and granting agencies, federal agencies in particular, when they see that something is based on collective work and from cooperative interests, really goes a long way towards receiving those monies to put this into action. So thanks for all the work that everyone's done.
Thank you. And I hope that as we draft this bill and move it forward, that we can reach back to all of you to come forward and support it when the legislature is in session, and make sure that people understand it was a collaboration, that there was a lot of give and take, there was expertise at the table, and that will become apparent as we move a bill. So thank you.
So I have also thoroughly enjoyed getting a chance to participate in this. It's been great, and enjoyed working with all of you doing that. I do feel that clean water is really what it is all about, even though it's just kind of in the preamble now, or wherever we place that. I also believe that education is even more important than get you at this, Betsy, but more important than enforcement. I think education is. I've seen people change behaviors with education in mass versus the few that don't and are going to do the whatever in the anyway. And so I really believe in education, and I look forward to seeing what this initiative will bring forth, because I dearly love shellfish.
Thank you.
Well, I just want to thank everybody. It's been an honor and a privilege to sit around a table with all you guys, and I got to learn a lot, and I hope to work with you guys all in the future. What Don said, I don't think I could even think of saying better. It summed it up, and I'm with Claire, but I think education and enforcement are one and the same. So thank you, guys.
Thanks.
I've sat on a lot of committees and groups and task force over the last couple of years, and I think this is the first time I've seen industry, ports, tribal agencies, and all in one room where there has been no yelling, no cussing. I feel like we actually got somewhere. It's not perfect, and there's a lot of stuff a lot of us would like to see or like to do, but that's coming down the road. And as long as we keep this momentum and everybody stands behind it, supporting what we did do, even though we'd like to see more, I think it will be a success. So I look forward to your question earlier about, hopefully people are interested in continuing on. I would definitely, both of me, myself, and the company, definitely want to be supportive of this moving forward every year, whatever is needed.
Jesse?
I don't have much of a comment, but thank you very much for your effort. This is
cool. Thank you for your participation. It's a long way to Coos Bay, so I appreciate you taking that. It's a lot of effort to come here, and I know that your season's busy. And for everyone in the room, this has been a lot of work, and I'm grateful. Beth, Talk about the document for a minute, and then we'll move forward with our action.
Okay, so this document, with all my changes now that I've made in it, I will go back through after this, and I will work to integrate the comments that you made. In addition, so what I think has evolved here is that the high priority items have kind of become your critical actions for 2017. So I will make that clear, that it seems like that's where the group's going. And then Steve has offered to help me use some great pictures and things like this to make this a less text heavy and a little bit more attractive document. So once that is done, I'll email it out to the entire group, and then we will submit it to the two Agriculture and Natural Resources, and then the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee by the due date September 15th, and then you would have completed the scope of your work. So congratulations.
All right, thank you. So what we will be doing is adopting the proposed Oregon Shellfish Task Force recommendation. Even though this is in conceptual form, Beth will flesh it out by all the conversations that we have had today, and we'll move forward. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, before I make the motion, I want to agree with Claire that clean water is terribly important. It's how the language ends up in the document that I think matters to some of us a great deal. The other thing is, I don't want to shortchange the education piece. What you're doing with those kids will have a lasting impression on them. Who knows? Some of them may go into the industry. Some of them may pursue other paths. But you and I don't disagree. We just may have a different balancing act to get to the same place. So with that, Madam Chair, I would move the adoption of the proposed Oregon Shellfish Task Force recommendations as they are conceptually drafted at this point.
Senator Johnson moves to adopt the proposed Oregon Shellfish Task Force recommendations as proposed today. Is there any further discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Mr. Resolves?
Aye.
Mr. Ivey?
Aye.
Mr. Romo?
Aye.
Mr. Sandy?
Aye.
Mr. Sylvie?
Aye.
Mr.
Thomas? Aye.
Mr.
Vanderkamp?
Aye.
Mr. Mike Hansen?
Aye.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Chairman
Keenan? Aye. The motion passes, and the Oregon Shellfish Task Force proposed recommendation has been adopted.
With 2 minutes over.
Look at that.
And we are adjourned on that note.
2 minutes over.
Look at that.
And we are adjourned.